welcome to the Interracial John Podcast. I'm your host, Leslie Mack, and I'm joined, as always,
by one very white guy.
What's going on, dude?
Not a whole lot.
Welcome to the show. If you're joining us for the first time, we're happy to have you here, and welcome to everybody else. You can find us on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. Just search Interracial John, that's J-A-W-N, and please do subscribe on either one of those portals or any of the podcatcher that you may be using to listen to our show. You can also find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, and Periscope. And again, that's at Interracial John. I will say, if you like our Facebook page specifically, we post most of the articles that we discuss on the show on the Facebook page, so you can have a little heads up before the show comes out.
Yeah, point of clarification. If you like Leslie's Facebook page the John, I don't do shit.
Yeah, you don't
like
do
literally
anything.
Zero.
But they don't have to know all of that. I think that's normal. I remember one of the funniest things on the read one time was when Crystal was like, you know, saying what I just said, and Kim Fiore goes, "Oh, we got an Instagram?" Like, he didn't even know.
I've said that to you about like a Tumblr. And, like, you said a couple of things like, "Oh, you can get us on Snapchat." Like, what? The John has a Snapchat?
No, John does not have a Snapchat, so don't be doing that out here. But anyways, we also love feedback. You can leave us a review on iTunes or Stitcher. If it's 5 stars, we will read it here on the air. You can also email us, interracialjohn, again, J-A-W-N, at gmail.com. And you can just pick up the phone and call us, 657-JOHN or 657-J-A-W-N-E-R-S. And if it's under 3 minutes and not fuck shit, we'll read it here on the air. Shout out to Rod and Karen from The Black Guy Who Tips for our general feedback rules. And also shout out to them because we're going to be on their show this Sunday, 10 a.m., out there in the world. So it's Sunday.
Yeah,
and Sunday's date. I have no idea.
I'm not sure, but
Sunday is the 21st of August. So Sunday, the 21st of August, 10 a.m. Drew and Leslie from the Interracial John will be on the Black Guy Who Tips.
I got to get. Let me see if I can get my. Where's my? How do I get these to work again?
What are you trying to do?
I've got to get my Johnner's voice of God voice because no one left any feedback.
We had no feedback this week. We had no voicemails. We had no emails.
I'm not like. I'm not saying I'm like
mad.
I'm not like gonna chide people.
It's just disappointing. That's all.
Yeah, we don't ask for money. We don't even have a link. You can't even pay us. No, there's no way you can give us money.
It's true.
You could call in and say, "Hey, listen to the show." I'm not gonna like. Maybe we should do it.
Maybe
another
a lot of people hate listening.
Maybe, but I'll do it another way. Like Outstanding WC, Katisha, they've been engaging with the show,
it's true.
Writing in. They've it's got true. Like own little like mini feud. You know, I'm just saying that
that could be you.
That could be you. That should be you. That should be you.
But you playing?
What you been these streets?
They should have been us, but you keep playing.
So you want to talk about our week?
Sure.
There's a couple of things that we forgot to talk about.
Okay.
Can we please? And I know they don't really listen to the show, so I'm going to like talk about them, but like it's okay because I love them and they know we love them and it's totally cool.
Okay.
So we've talked about our friends that are of a different caliber of wealth.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
You know, like honest to God 1%,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I don't mean that in a bad way.
No.
Beautiful people.
That's
love
who they are.
And they've been friends of ours for
decades.
Forever.
Literally.
Right?
Decades.
And honest to God, like, salt of the earth, greatest ass, like wonderful people, and they do like only good philanthropic things with their money, literally, right? So like they're really salt of the earth, but the male half works in the financial services industry,
yes,
which
true.
Means like you gotta like muckety muck it with country club types, and like you're dealing with people's money, and you know he makes money by making other people money, and he's really good at it. Like had some of their you know area's best years, and like he succeeds, and he's got like political clout, like you know like this is like
right.
the circle that he's in. Okay?
Yeah.
I love them to death.
Mm.
Oh man, I fucking hate some of the people in that circle. Like, I don't hate. That's not the wrong
word. You know,
word.
Those are not our kind of white
people. Those are not our kind of white people. Our friends are. But the circle that they got to, like, be in, and I hear them sometimes say this, like, "We really want you guys here. Please, can you be here for this thing?" You know, like yeah, we got you. I see you.
Yeah.
We feel you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But so we're hanging out. You're doing some cooking. I'm out on the boat because they got a boat, of course.
Of course they
boat
do.
People. Yeah. We're out on the boat and doing, like, boat people thing, you know, like,
Wakeboarding
and shit.
Kite surfing.
Yeah, you know, like
yeah,
both people stuff.
Fuck,
This is the insight into very white guy that you maybe didn't know. This is the very white part. Because right? This is like, this fits like a glove. This is my upbringing.
Oh, yeah,
like,
that's you.
On the lake.
In a private boat.
Fucking
blah,
A.
Blah,
that's
blah.
That's like my entire life. Like,
yeah.
Let's go shoot some trap, right? Like from Ducky and shit. Is that what it is?
Pretty pink. Yeah.
Isn't that what he says? Let's go shoot some
traps. Yeah, let's go shoot some traps.
Like, that's the most ridiculous thing. So this is us. We're hanging out.
Cut to us going skeet shooting in a couple weeks, but that's okay. Whatevs.
Whatever.
Whatever.
You married a very white guy.
I did.
So there's one friend that, again, I don't dislike. I don't dislike this individual.
Correct.
He's a fairly decent individual. Uh-huh. But
everybody's decent, though.
He's kind of like the embodiment and epitome of everyone I couldn't fucking stand in high school.
He kind of is like Steph from Pretty in Pink.
He kind of fucking is,
like,
dude.
Like
he's
come
literally
to
like,
life.
Let's go shoot some trap.
Like I
for
swear
real.
He usually has his collar up.
Oh,
like,
yeah. It's popped.
Ass.
He's like, blonde as fuck.
Yeah.
You know, like
the whole
still
thing.
Like a 32-inch waist at like
it's
48
like
years old.
The guy from the villain from Billy Zane from The Karate Kid.
Oh, totally. Totally.
Right?
Totally. Yeah, he's the Karate Kid. And I can't, again, like this is, you know, this is the circle. These are the people. And this is a friend of our friends in the same sense for like forever. So you're not going to like not be friends with this person that you've been friends with for like 20 years. But nevertheless, like, you know, dude's kind of going through a divorce and like I know some of the stuff and then I hear him talking about the divorce and it's like, man, bro, you're not coming off good, in my opinion. You're just not. Like, here are your kids. Like, you brought them here. Like, what's going on, buddy? What's going on? So anyway, we're out on the boat doing boat things and he gets all excited. And he's talking. He's like, oh, man, this movie, man, you got to fucking see it. It's fucking awesome. It's like our thing, man. It's like you just totally get like wasted. This movie just laugh. It's amazing. It's like back in the day. It's just me and you, dude, like the movie, man. I got to think of this movie is, man, the movie.
So awesome, man.
It's amazing. So he's like broing out. Like he's having like a brogasm about
this
movie.
And we
right?
went to this like, yeah.
So we're listening to him like bro out on the movie. Mm-hmm. And as he's like describing a little bit more, we almost simultaneously dawn like, oh, fuck.
What movie is he talking about?
He's talking about that fucking, and we haven't talked about it on this
we
show.
We have talked about it on the show. We okay. went off on it on
okay.
the show,
Richard,
actually.
Yeah, Richard Linklater's Everybody Wants Some.
Yeah,
right?
We talked
fucking,
about
like,
it on the show.
I guess like frat boy, like rape culture, like fantasy, I guess you'd call it, right?
I guess.
But so it was like absolutely pointless and worthless and just about like getting pussy and like fucking pussy and like let's get some pussy and drink some beers and smoke some weed and get some pussy.
Right.
Oh, and by the way, did we mention getting some pussy? Because that's what we do. We get some pussy. Mm-hmm. Like, what's that thing from the cartoon? Like, I too like the vagina. You like the vagina? I like the vagina. Like, a little too much. But
it's
so,
pretty much, yeah.
This is going on. I'm like, oh my God, he's talking about Everyone Wants Some. So, like, you elbow me. I'm like, oh, fuck. He's
like,
talking about that fucking movie. No way. And, like, he is the main character from that movie. Right. Take off the mustache, and he's that dude.
He is that dude.
It just was, like, too fucking much.
It was a lot.
They're like, you're the main character from Everybody Wants Some, and now you're, like, broing out on Everybody Wants Some.
It was a whole lot.
Yeah. I didn't get the sound button in time, but did you hear? I noticed we're listening to the Backspin, I guess, on Sirius XM, and they had Nelly, Country Grammar.
Yes.
There's a line about Trump.
Oh, yeah.
Bill Gates, Donald Trump, let me in now.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, man, that's kind of, I guess, like, I don't know, like, timely? No. So, I know you don't want to talk too much about it, but Joffrey.
Joffrey?
I'm worried you listen to the podcast.
It seems like he did, because I'm telling you, I was cooking in the kitchen 2 days ago, and that motherfucker was, like, on my neck.
No, listen. You said, can you help me? And I came in and did the thing you asked for. And then you're like, no, can you come in and be in the kitchen? And you didn't say why, but, like, I can kind of tell you were, like, not comfortable.
Yeah.
So I grab a chair, and, like, our kitchen's not exactly, like, you know, it's, like,
huge.
6 feet by five feet. It's like,
small
okay,
kitchen.
I'll sit right here in the corner. Mm-hmm. And Beatrice, our white woman dog, is just acting a fool. I mean, like, mm-hmm. really, like, she's weird. She's uncomfortable.
She's, like, whining.
She barked at a couple of things
barked
randomly.
Barked a few random things, yep.
And I'm not even fucking, like, you know, I don't, like, fool around. Like, I don't fuck around with Joffrey. Like, it's some serious business to me.
Yeah. But now, but go on.
His presence in that room was
palpable. I could feel him. And I said to you, I was like, I hate cooking in here because it's like everything takes me three times longer because shit just like nothing works right. And he's right in the mix. It's really
At one point, all of us are in the kitchen and there was I don't want to say a sound, but like it was from in the house.
Yeah.
The walls, the floor. It's like, what the fuck was that? Like, it literally was like somebody moved furniture, like, inside our house.
Right.
Like, honest to God. Yep. Like, how does that...
He frequently just
what
sounds
fucking
like
sound
footsteps.
Is that?
Like, footsteps what? on the floor a lot of times. It'll just sound like that.
Well, that shit freaked me right the out. And so we've talked about it, like, you know, what's like people joke, like friends of ours, like, what's it going to take? Like chairs moving across, like poltergeist, like stacking themselves up. Like, when are you going to decide, like, okay, deuces, like sell this house. Like,
well, you are a very white guy. I fear, yeah. I fear that line is very far.
It's quite a ways.
I would have moved already.
I know. Just up to I know.
You, I'd already been out of this you. Fucking place.
So a home. And homeowners in the UK have been driven out of their home by a poltergeist after their pet levitated.
What?
Yeah. Police officers called to the house in Glasgow last week. Reportedly saw the family's pet chihuahua levitating and clothes flying across the room. A mother and teenager contacted the officers after being extremely distressed by the violent and unexplained circumstances. They were incidents that were witnessed by our police officers, incidents that are not easily explained. Officers with more than 20 years service are saying they've never seen anything like this. It really is something that down-to-earth police officers have trouble getting their heads around. How do you handle what, despite us like to use the word, has been described as like not liking to use the word, has been described as a poltergeist? Another insider said the officers witnessed the lights going off, clothes flying across the room, and the dog sitting on the top of a hedge. Officers called their superiors, who also attended, thinking the cops were perhaps being a bit silly, but it's being taken very seriously. The fact that it is witnessed by our officers has lent itself a very different active inquiry.
I bet.
Catholic priests is probably prone to blessing and been called to the property. I don't know where that line is.
If the dog levitates, we're out then.
If Bailey starts floating around
here,
you guys heard it here.
Levitating dog, we're moving.
Levitating dog. And
so that's as far as it has to go?
I don't think it has to go that far.
Where else? Because we've had phones thrown across the room, food things falling to the floor. We had an incident in the sink. We've had our lights go on and off directly in front of us.
I'll equivocate and white explain the ghost, but like, you know how people talk about, like, there's a comedian has a joke with, like, you know, don't pull the plug while I'm in a coma. Maybe being in a coma is like the greatest thing on earth.
Right.
Like, maybe we just got to like communicate a little bit differently.
You want us to lean into the ghost is what you're saying.
You can start like helping us fucking like, you know, cook around the kitchen.
He don't give a fuck about us. Like I dead ass, I'm worried his body's in the walls here. Like that's where
when it was on the last few days when it was like crazy in the kitchen, I said that to you. I said, this is like Stir of Echoes. There's a body underneath here. Somebody's dead.
Maybe there's somebody out there. They probably wouldn't be here in Grand Rapids, but maybe there's somebody out there that could come and like fucking figure out what the fuck's going on here.
So have you noticed all the amusement park incidents that are getting
seems like, yeah, I keep seeing on the news every day. It's like this one had a kid fall, this one had people upside down for 10 hours, this one had this thing.
Well, and there's been, I guess, some incidents, and I think the number of injuries is in line with normal years. It's not like you know, statistically
bitches get killed on them all the time.
Yeah, like, but well, one was a congressman's kid or a senator's kid that broke his neck on the water park in the Schlichtenberg, or I forget the name of it. It's like the world's biggest water slide there in Kansas, and it's called like Der Schlichtenstein, or I can't remember. But anyway, he died on that, and maybe it was too small, wasn't the right amount of weight. I don't know what happened. But so all these incidents, there was a news piece from the International Association of Amusement Parks and Attractions, IAPA, if you will, talking about that very fact that it's still one of the safest forms of entertainment, and you know, it's not a statistical anomaly, and it's just that, you know, news media is making a big deal out of it, and you know, it's still super, super safe. Go to your amusement parks, don't fuck around. And it got me thinking, like, one about our experience, because I actually used to work, they were my client, this International Association of Amusement Parks and Attractions, and got all kinds of cool shit. Like, I had employees that would go to, was it Taiwan? Yeah, right? Isn't that where they make a lot of these things? Like
Thailand.
No, was it Thailand? Yeah, it was Thailand.
Or Hong Kong.
Somewhere in Asia. So the
I thought it was Hong Kong.
There's always an Asian conference, because the amusement parks are a worldwide business, not just United States, right?
Right, right.
So there's always a big trade show in Asia, and then a big trade show here in the United States, but or here in North America, rather. But so I didn't go, but I would send my employees, and they'd fucking be like, "Oh man, it was amazing! There was like cotton candy and popcorn, and like you know, because it's like shit that you'd buy and sell to amusement parks and stuff." So like they're going like on behalf of our business and our clients and doing, you know, the things that we do, but I used to do. I don't work for that company anymore, but when it came time for their big, they had a couple of different, so it was like, I get to cherry pick. I was the boss. I was like, okay, you go to Thailand, you go to fucking like, you know, Kansas for the fucking, like, the big trade show. You do all this other shit. But then there was one that came across my purview that was, they shut down one of the amusement parks, like Great Adventure type deals. Mm-hmm. At, I think, was it like 4 o'clock in the afternoon, maybe? Like 2 or 3 in the afternoon?
It was 3, I thought.
On like a Tuesday. Like, yeah. So they basically bought the whole place out and then were inviting their, like, you know, high up, like, muggity muck people. And it was for the, like, maybe the 50th anniversary of the company that owns Great Adventure and Great America.
Six Flags. Yeah, Six Flags 50th anniversary. Yeah. Exactly right.
So I get invited to this thing, and I'm like, wait a minute. You know, I ain't giving this any employees. We doing this one, right? So we go thinking, like, I don't know, like, I don't know what to expect. I'm just thinking, like, okay, this will be something kind of, like, cool, right?
Yeah, fun.
Fun. So it's just you and me. Bobby was
with us.
Right, so I invited a colleague.
One of your employees.
I took one of the employees. Yeah. I'm like, all right,
he was even working
in
on
fact,
the book.
No, in fact, that's exactly right. The other two got to go to either Asia or Kansas.
Right.
Bobby was on the lower end, right. So he didn't get to go anywhere, so right. I took him here.
Yes.
And again, I thought, like, okay, I'll just, you know, pay for whatever, and, like, this will be a fun kind of, like, whatever. So we get to the park, and there was two or three black folk leaving, lamenting the fact that the park was closed, that they couldn't get in, right? That it was special invite, VIP, whatever only.
Right.
And my thing allowed us to bring, I think, like 6 people, and only the 3 of us. So here, you guys, you know, come with me. And they're like, are you sure? Are you sure? I'm like, yeah, come on. So we go into the park. And again, I don't know anything about anything at this time. And I know that I can get these 3 folks in. So here, come with me into the park, right? And we get in, and they're trying to give us money. And I'm like, no. Just, you know, I'm not taking, especially because, like, this was a client that gave this to me. I'm not going to, like, charge them to get in, right? Like, that'd be, like, ludicrous. That it'd be unethical beyond. I'm not going to do that. So I'm like, no, keep your money. So we get inside. And all of a sudden, it's like, wait a minute, there's fucking nobody here, right? Like, the park is, like, straight up empty, deserted.
Like nobody's deserted. There.
Everything.
Like, I'm shocked they turned them away. That's how few people were right there. Like, literally, it's like,
well, it's a private event. It's a private event.
I know, but come on.
I mean, you have a private event, you have a private event.
I get it. I'm just
so
saying.
So, when I say everything's free, like, you know, like, the ring toss games and all the shit to, like, win, like, big
things? The food is free, literally. Everything that you can get in there is free.
Like, no, I'm talking, all like, the I go to the ring toss thing, the guy gives me a bucket of rings, like 50 rings. I throw them all at once. None of them get on the thing.
He gave you the biggest
And he goes, do you want the big panda?
He's like, do you want the big one? And you're like, yeah.
I guess. There you go. All right, whatever.
I was taking a bite of
it
shit and just throwing it away. Because I was trying everything.
Give me a hot dog and this. Give me that.
Cinnamon jalapeno pretzel. Sure, let's try that shit. It sounds disgusting, but I'll take a bite.
And throw it away.
Like, so it was so ridiculous.
The biggest ride that you normally, even if you go to Great Adventure on a ticket and then you get into the park, you still have to pay to go on this additional big swing ride.
Mm-hmm.
That thing, they had a ticket for you. You can only do it once. But we got in there and did a ticket and got on the swing, like, right away, within like a minute. Normally, yep. That thing's like, you get into the park and you, like, pay another additional fee and come back like 7 hours later and do your fucking ride and wait 45 minutes and shit. Like, it's normally crazy.
Yeah,
we went on their most popular ride, Superman. It went around, or Batman, or whatever it is, like, you're laying down. The thing went around, and the guy's like, you want to go again? We're like, yeah, okay. And we didn't even get off. The most popular ride went around like 3 or 4 times with us on it. It was absolutely bonkers. So I've done every fucking ride in the park 3 times. My head's like spinning. I'm really like, I'm too old for this shit kind of thing. And we're getting ready to leave, and who do we see? We see the 3 people that we brought into the park, and you tell me what they were like.
They were like, oh my God, yo, this is amazing. I can't thank you enough. This is the most amazing thing ever, man. Oh my God. They were like carrying goldfish.
Awesome. It was awesome.
And shit. They had so much stuff.
Awesome.
They had sweatshirts. Because when I tell
awesome.
You wanted a hat, you got a hat.
Yeah.
Anything. Yeah. Literally anything. It was ridiculous.
The thing that I kind of remember about it that gave me a lot of joy, even back then, and this is like a decade plus ago maybe, we weren't really as active within the sort of black liberation movement. But because it was all like muckety mucks, it was mostly white people. So there wasn't, I think, hardly any black people there at all. And most of the white people were being kind of like, you know, like in suit and tie, crusty kind of white, right? So it was awesome that there was some black folk at the park, like being unapologetically like black and enjoying the shit out of the park. Because we were too. It was like, and we haven't gone back since. I almost refused to pay.
I won't go
for
back.
Amusement park. It's like, why would I
for sure won't go back for so many reasons, because A, I don't even go on the roller coaster. So for me, it literally is a waste of money because I don't even use the shit that you pay for.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the one time we went outside of this, we actually went to the water park, and that's different because I actually go on the water rides. So I wouldn't go to amusement park again.
No, I'm done.
Because this time we didn't pay and I didn't use everything and I was like, cool. And I got all the free shit too. But it was ruined for us forever.
Yeah. That it was like there was... You sit in first class, and I was like, damn.
Yeah.
Now I know what it's like.
You sit in business class, you're like, wait a minute.
That sucks. Now I'm back on coach. And this is a little bit like that, but I'll never go back to a park. Because it just, it was satisfying on a level that I'll never want to approach again.
Yeah.
And I know I can't, so I'll never bother trying.
Right.
Like, literally never bother trying. And from a my brain and, like, the, what do they call those vestibule things inside your ear, the canals that sense your... upright and head, you know, the vestibular canals inside your ear.
Yeah.
I forget the name of it, but
mm-hmm.
As that shit, as you get older, the liquid and the fluid and shit doesn't move the same and your sense of balance is not the same. You know, it's like people like fall and break a hip kind of thing. And roller coasters fuck that shit up.
Yeah.
I can't, they make me uncomfortable. Like yeah. I get off like, wait a minute. I'm like, my equilibrium is completely thrown. And that day was just absolutely bonkers. Bonkers, bonkers.
So... we went to Chicago this weekend. You had a really great business meeting, and we also went to a movies. We went to see Sausage Party, which we're going to talk about later. But we also went to Reggae Fest in Chicago. And
I think reggae is a misnomer in this.
Like
instance.
Really, so much of it was so disturbing. I'll just go through a few of my general observations, which I did make on Twitter as well. But I went like hoping like. Great music. I love reggae music. I'm Jamaican. Awesome. I was thinking Caribbean food, which they said on their website, you know, and black people. I figured this is
that's
like
a, that's a reasonable assumption.
For some
reasonable
good, some
assumption.
Good fucking times, right? I get there. We get there, and I'm like, Drew, what? Why are there so many white people here? And when I mean so many white people, it was 20-1 white people to black people on the south side of Chicago.
Yeah, it wasn't just 20-1. It was 20-1, and then it was like. Again, not my favorite kind of white people. Like
a lot of dreads. Yeah, like a lot of
like. I feel like the reggae culture in some places has been appropriated by the pot smoking culture.
Oh, I think it's more appropriated by the like
outlaw.
Parrot head.
Oh, parrot head.
Barefoot was, and
see, this seemed like
Kenny Chesney. All of that, like to me, that's what was there. That's what was there. That's what it
You're
looked
right
like
about
to me.
That. It was not quite
what is it,
biker.
Barefoot Nation.
Yeah,
or whatever
it
the
wasn't.
Fuck it
wasn't
is.
Quite biker.
No,
but it was still like a little bit. I would say desiring to be contrarian while being contrarian nonetheless.
Correct.
In their, yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a lot, and white dreads end up on white folk in that way a lot. Like,
yes.
White folk think of dreads as a, I don't know, a political statement,
a
counterculture
thing.
Yeah,
they do. Mm-hmm. So that's the first problem. Next, we watch one of your favorite bands, Budos Band, there. And you like them, and that's all good and well, but they literally played a heavy metal set at this reggae fest. And I don't give a shit what you try to say.
No,
you know
so
I'm right.
Here's the thing. The Budos Band, I feel like I don't follow them, but there's definitely – they had some kind of shakeup where there's not the same players. Because when we saw them
they
open up
they had a bunch of like Brazilian and like Afro-Cuban people in the band. And now
gone.
It's a
all
bunch
white
of
dudes.
White dudes.
Yeah, so when we saw them open up for Sharon Jones many moons ago when they were small and, you know, still touring in New Jersey, they're – stage band, and maybe this is different because they came all the way to Chicago, but their
but
stage
wait a second
band,
was that them or was that Tubab crew?
No, that was Budos.
Oh, okay.
I like Tubab. I love Tubab crew,
I know
but
you
hate
Tubab.
Them. But so, and they're similar, like I would say, like world music vibe.
Yeah,
you know, more than Afro Cuban for Tubab. Tubab's more got like a.
Like a New Orleans-y.
No, they've got more okay. Like a Middle Eastern because the one guy plays the I forget the name of that instrument that's got. Its roots in Middle Eastern music.
Oh, okay.
But anyway.
Like a sitar?
You no, know, he sits down and it's a string drum thingy-bobby. I
okay.
Can't remember. But Tubab Crew's sweet if you're into jam music. But anyway, Budos, when we saw him, like you said, had fucking like 12 dudes on stage, including multiple horns. And then the percussion rhythm section had a drummer, another dude playing the like the bongos,
yep.
And another dude that was literally
doing
just
like
playing
tambourines and the
percussive instruments
and like a
yeah.
Whole host
yeah.
Of shit.
Had the big
he,
had the big ball
thing.
With the fucking
yeah.
You know, all that stuff,
yeah.
Right? The fish, the
yep. He had
all
he had an arsenal
of
stuff.
Had arsenal of shit, and they played. I would say more Afro-Cuban rhythms, right?
Afro-Cuban rhythms, and I would have called it like Afro-jazz almost.
Yeah,
like, yes.
There wasn't lyricism.
There was no melody.
Almost all instrumental. Yeah. And it was more jam, yeah. Right? It was like improvisational jam with like an Afro-jazz.
Right, but it was like I would say.
But I found that highly enjoyable.
Yeah,
highly
not enjoyable. My cup of tea, but whatever.
I'm with you on that. I will.
That's fine.
Yeah, I'll agree that that's my mode, not yours, right? And I like tribal kind of, you know, shit like that you don't always. Anyway, yeah. Now it's like five white dudes, one or two horns, only a drummer. They've got lyrics, and they almost sound more like Humphrey McGee's.
It's terrible.
And I like Humphrey McGee's, but Humphrey McGee's is like a heavy metal jam band.
And they shouldn't be at a reggae fest.
Never.
On the big stage. Now,
Humphreys wouldn't go to a reggae fest. And they even said, they're like, well, you know, we play like an alternative kind of reggae. No, you don't
play reggae, sirs.
In fact, I forget the actual rhythm, right? There's like a 3-4 rhythm. There's like a 4, you know, bar rhythm. There's different like rhythms you can have in music. Mm. And there's a specific rhythm that reggae takes that's like that, you know, the bass line that you have in all reggae music. And there's a form of that that I don't think they hit once.
Right. Like,
whatever that beat or rhythm is, that timing. There's that reggae timing rhythm beat. They just didn't hit it. Yeah. Not fucking once.
So that's one thing. I go look at the vendors. There's one Caribbean food vendor.
Yeah, but what was really weird, and again, I know what they did. This is, again, it's sponsored by like a rock station, first of all.
I was going to get to that. That's one of my things.
But so I think what they did is that they, whoever put this on, the vendors had to pay money to be there. They had to pay a fee to be there. And I don't think that the food vendors, like that would be like a local black owned Caribbean food vendor,
right,
are willing or can afford that fee. So what they ended up with was like Gino's Pizza.
Yeah, literally.
Fucking like, I know it's tacos. Chicago and it's reggae fest and shit, but like there's Gino's.
Like a, there's like 100 Caribbean restaurants in Chicago.
But this is the venue, and the organizer, I'm saying,
we paid a lot of money to go to this fucking thing.
Yeah, we don't need to have and the
it
vendors
pay
it to
should have
too.
Delivered on that thing. Whatever he needed to do to get those people there, they should have been there. That's my point.
What you do is when you're double dipping like that, you're going to fuck both parties, and they're going to have a lesser experience for everybody.
Yeah.
Now less people come because the food isn't as great, and this isn't great, and the atmosphere is less great. Now less vendors come.
Yeah.
And you can't charge the vendors as much.
So then I go look at the merch vendors. There's one black business, maybe two.
There was the one selling the Bob Marley shirt, which was a black, definitely owned business. Mm-hmm. And then there was the one behind it that was...
And that was it.
Yeah.
And I can't guarantee the other one either. Just saying. I don't know.
Well,
it could have just been working.
Are you going to talk about that one?
I'm getting to that.
Okay.
I'll get to it. And then, as you mentioned, again, I'm just counting down the things. Chicago's finest rock station was the media sponsor. And finally, as we're walking out to leave, we go look at the vendors, and there's a tent and a booth that has Black Lives Matter t-shirts. So they had like Black Women Matter, Black Lives Matter. We walk over, I'm starting to look at them, and I turn my head and I see hanging up in an entire row of all different colors of a shirt with a black power fist and All Lives Matter written on it.
Yeah. He had a whole fucking booth of Black Lives Matter and was selling them like, you know, pretty decent price, $10, you know, 3 for $25 or whatever. And the row of All Lives Matter and the All Lives Matter shirt with the black power fist. Like, it really looks like the Real Justice Philadelphia Coalition logo, like identically to that, mm-hmm. but with the words All Lives Matter underneath it.
It's,
and
it's crazy.
Like, but I guess there's that many white people here. I feel bad that, like, I don't know, like, I'm not going to be, like, shitty mad at said vendor. Like, said vendor's got to make money the way he's got to make money.
I mean, but I looked around and I said, this is a fucking All Lives Matter crowd. Of course he brought those shirts.
Of course he brought those.
That was the first thing I thought.
Not going to buy one.
But I wasn't buying shit from that motherfucker. I can tell you that right now. Bye. Yeah. That's why I always rail against the whole, like, buy black. Like, yeah. Not when they're fuck shit like this, I'm not buying black.
And
like,
I'm not saying this guy's fuck shit. This guy's making money. He's got a business. Hey, if you came to that show and it was 20-1 white people, you better goddamn have the All Lives Matter shirt. But then the one black person you ain't going to sell to. So don't sweat it. Know what you're doing. Know what you're fucking doing.
Mm. I just know, like, people scoff when I try and say that I deserve to be paid for my actual work in movement spaces. And to see somebody profiting off of a movement or trying to
this way
is disgusting. That guy's fuck shit. I'm sorry.
And you can't. I'm saying I'm with you in not supporting him, but I'm not going to castigate, you know.
I'm saying I will.
you are entitled to. I am not.
Fuck that dude.
Should we bring in on that note, should we bring to
Anyways,
bring
in Dr. We have a guest on the show today. We're very excited. It's our first time on the show, so we're going to grab her. But just to also let you know a few other things we have coming up next week. We have Beauty Jackson on the show, Mel from the Good and Terrible show. And we finish out the month with Nick Jew and R to the Edgy from What's the Tea. So excited for all that. But yeah, let's grab Dr. Amin and get started.
Let's do it.
All right. And we are back with our special guest. First time on the show, long time listener, and I'll introduce her now. Dr. Takiya Noor Amin.
Please clap.
I'm trying to do the intro. Like, what the frick? Oh. Hi, Takiya, first of all, then I'll get to the intro because apparently Drew just.
Please clap for the doctor. The doctor's in the house.
Hey, y'all.
What's going on? Anyway, Takiya is an intellectual by training and tradition. She earned her PhD in dance and cultural studies with certificates in women's studies and teaching in higher education from Temple University in 2011. She's an active member of the National Coalition of 100 Black Women, an advocacy organization on behalf of Black women and girls, a lover of reading, podcasts, travel, and shopping. She's currently assistant professor of dance studies. She's a native of Buffalo, New York, and newly appointed lead organizer for Black Lives of Unitarian Universalism Organizing Collective. Welcome, Dr. Amin, to the show.
The doctor's in the house.
We are
makes me sound fancy.
You're pretty fancy, though.
To me?
Oh, you fancy.
Y'all gonna make me stretch myself to my full height.
Yes.
You know what? I don't say this lightly. There aren't many people that have entertained me quite as deliciously as you have over a select period of time. Like for like a good, like, I mean, it was like 77 hours in Columbus, did you? I mean, really, my side still hurt.
Seriously.
Well, I am delicious, delightful, and all of that good stuff. These are true things. True. These are true things.
Facts.
Well, and plus, I get to work the rice paddy, so that's cool like that.
We're going to keep you. We're going to keep you. When the revolution breaks out,
you are
going to work in the rice paddy. We're going to let you, you know, manage the dormitory. And everything should be fine.
If you really wanted to, like, really go, like, full on out, be like, we're going to tattoo the word cuck on your head. It's good. We're going to keep you. It's good. It's good. Don't sweat it. You know?
Oh, my goodness. Well, we barely could press record because we already started cracking up before we even started recording. But I will say that, funnily enough, Takiya and I seem to just continually be bumping into each other, which is really funny because we both listen to The Black Guy Who Tips and we're in that Facebook group. And the other day, I mean, I had seen your posts and stuff like that, but then we were in a thread about you.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, girl, you. Oh, you is like one of those, like, oh, a unicorn, a black you.
Yeah. Well, no, I'll tell you what it really is. The unicorn is less so being a black you, but like a black you that wants to be black and that is really comfortable and happy about their blackness and likes things that are identifiably black and isn't in a UU space specifically because they don't want to identify with blackness. Yeah, that's the unicorn.
Yeah, and hasn't left the fuck out yet.
Yeah, right? And it hasn't rolled the fuck out. Exactly.
Yeah.
So you started there, true. And then, of course, at General Assembly, we got to spend a lot of time together. And so you said you listened to the show, and we're like, we got to come on the show. And you were like, no, not me. Oh. And here you are.
Look, the best part about that, though, was so we sitting in the healing space, and I'm eating something, you know, full of carbohydrates. And Drew walks in, and I don't say nothing, but I'm like, is this Mickey Ficky supposed to be in the black healing space? Somebody better vouch for him real quick. Then I put two and two together and was like, oh my God, his voice usually comes out of my phone. And then it was okay, because I was looking around like, we going to have to get FOI or somebody. Yeah.
So just on the real, when we walked in, that was like, okay, there's only like 10 minutes, you know, loved ones of black UUs may enter for this prayerful moment. And I walk in with everyone else, you know, the other white folk or non-black, you know, people of color, spouses or whatever. And I'm doing that right now, like, where's Leslie? You know, hurry up. I can't, don't leave me out here. I gotta tag in. I gotta make sure I'm touching base here. I gotta make some physical contact.
Why am I here again? Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was like, look, she gonna have to vouch because I was starting to, I'm like, I need to see some papers, a green stamp.
Something. We need something.
No. Yeah, Who taught you the password?
I'll tell you this too. I definitely give off a goofy, dumb, like there's a guy when I was at a gym, he was this training dude. He was one of these like military style and he'd yell at me. Like that was his thing. And his nickname for me was Lurch. From like the from the monkey and the Addams Family, like, come on, Lurch, come on. So like that, I get it. That,
I think that's kind of mean, Drew. I mean, you don't have
he wasn't really mean.
Don't give me a lurchful vibe.
He used to be more lurchy before I came. This guy
was kind of mean. He even like after I left, he's like, and then at the end, he's like, these women's kicking your ass. You're never gonna come back. I can tell, Lurch. There's two kinds of people: those that are gonna change and those that'll never come back. You never come back, kind of Lurch. Never come back. And then I'd be in the gym. I'm not even kidding. I swear to God. I'd be in the gym with like, and I'd be, at this time I was running. I was literally running. Like, I'm a runner. I'd be running like 3 miles on my lunch break. Like, straight up, I'd go run 3 miles on my lunch break. And here he'd be like, never come back, Lurch. Never come back. You motherfucker.
That is a horrible way to treat somebody who's trying to like,
yeah, but that was
the, you know, yeah, affirm their fitness goals and be a better person and shit. Like,
I'm not like saying like no big deal, but it was like that early 90s, like, you know, the whole fucking like cocaine camp, cowboy. Yeah, like, yeah, that, like, it was just fucking, it was weird.
That's weird. Mm-hmm. Well, I promise that when you are managing the dormitory and leading the others in the rice paddy, we will not call you Lurch.
No, we won't.
We will not do that. No.
Uncle Cuck.
Now that's going to have to be the name of the episode. Congratulations on that one.
That's a possibility. We're like 12 minutes in. You can't say it's going to be called Uncle Cuck.
Okay, whatever.
If it was really going to be bad, it would be Uncle Cuckus.
See, that's why you need Jesus. That's exactly
why. Uncle Cuckus,
why,
dude. I'm totally making that my Abby nickname. I'm fucking Twitter right now, dude. Oh God, Uncle Cuckus.
Anyways, so you spend time with young people, unlike us.
I do.
Yes, college age young people, which is the scariest kind. Next to middle schoolers, they're definitely the devil. That's the order it goes. Middle schoolers, then college students. So I found this little article that talked about 16 things I wish someone told me before my first year of college.
Okay.
So I'm going to put them to you and see if you think these would resonate with your students. Here we go.
Here we go.
Number one, no one is staring at you.
You know, I do find that college students, traditional age college students, with all of the baggage that label sort of carries, are especially self-conscious and believe that they are being looked at, that they are being watched, that they are being stared at. And, you know, on some levels it's true, particularly sometimes if they represent a marginalized community. But in general, everybody else is as insecure as you are.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to be quite as worried as you might be. Everybody else is looking for somebody to sit within the dining hall too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That probably took me to like 20 something to like, I was a bit dead ass. Like they're like, not like people are staring at me, but there was a definite, like, what will the proverbial they think,
right,
was a, you know, that was something that was in my,
right. Once you realize everyone's thinking that, it's like, oh, no one's noticing anything.
Exactly.
All right, that actually segues well into the second thing, which is you probably won't find a solid group of friends until your sophomore year.
Oh, that's very true. Mm-hmm. That's very true. The first year, I think, kind of feels like tap dancing on Jell-O.
Mm.
You know, you spend the whole first year just trying to establish some sense of yourself within a college or university community. And I think you will develop situational relationships. That person in that English class who you kind of talk to when you do group work, or that person down the hall in the dorm who you kind of smile at, But in terms of really settling into a groove and having a community, that takes a little while.
Mm-hmm. It's the dead truth. My freshman year, I still was friends with people I went to high school with that knew me as Andy. And in the dorms and around, people would know me as Andy Garneau, like Andy from the Garneau, whatever, Harvey Hall. And by my sophomore year, I was Drew. It's completely like, no, I'm not Andy from that dorm. Thank you. But
that's funny. Mm-hmm. Number three is you don't have to go to that party. It's okay to stay home and watch Netflix.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of pressure, I think, put on first year students to, oh, come out, be a part of things. You're in college now. You can do whatever you want. La, la, la. And it really might not be wise to party Tuesday to Sunday. As a matter of fact, it isn't. And if you don't want to go, you don't have the money to go, you don't feel like going, or you don't want to be there for whatever reason, that's perfectly fine. You don't have to yield to that kind of social pressure of this is college, this is what everybody is doing. Because the truth is, it's not what everybody's doing.
Right.
Some of us are at home watching Netflix.
Yeah. And I think, too, like that's just how I would say, like, leisure time has evolved, too. Like, I feel like there isn't this need to necessarily go somewhere to have fun. You know, it is fun to just stay in and you know, do Saturday night sci-fi with all the blurs on Twitter. Like, that's a fun activity. It's not a party, but it's still something that you're doing. So,
right.
Yeah.
at freshman year, I got invited to this one place that was like all the older students because I was entertaining. So I'd get to go to free and drink because I was entertaining.
We see how well that turned out. Be careful who you give your heart to.
Oh, child. That's
first of all, that's just a life lesson. So that's the first thing. But yeah, definitely freshman year is definitely like, whoo, that's.
Well, yes. You know, and I think that there's a certain kind of social pressure that college is the place that you're going to go and find your lifelong love. And y'all are going to be together for 4 years and have this amazing da-da-da. And that happens to some people, but it's extremely rare. And it's also not something you have to be on the hunt for.
Right.
Like, did you come there to hunt for that? Like, you might be missing the point by a long, you know, by a wide margin there.
Mm-hmm. I had at least one relationship where, like, the girl, like, in a huff ended it. And I was like, oh, I didn't even know we were, damn, sorry. I like you didn't call me for something. It's over. Oh, we was together. I thought we were just fucking. I really didn't know it was like that.
You're such an asshole.
I was that dude. Sorry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You do not have to be pre-med.
Please don't be. Please don't be. I mean, part of the increasing kind of problem, I think, in higher ed for a lot of students is that coming from high school, what you think you need to major in is often really, really small in terms of the disciplines that have been offered to most students. And particularly a lot of arts and humanities disciplines and their benefits aren't even talked about. So for a lot of students, they come to college or university, they don't know what women's studies is.
Right.
They don't know what religious studies is or why you might choose to study something like social work or communications as opposed to biology or quote unquote hard sciences. Even that language is really problematic. And even if you want to be a doctor, you still don't have to be pre-med undergrad. You can go to med school with an English major.
Right.
You know, it's a new world out here. You don't have to come in and buckle down like that quite so quickly.
Mm-hmm. The library is overrated.
Oh, I disagree with that. I'm going to say no. I disagree with that.
Yeah, that would I have to say yes and no. I mean, it might be overrated for you in terms of a study space.
Yeah, that's what I think they're talking about.
Yeah, students sometimes find the library to be a little too quiet. I know I always like to be studying or writing in places where there's that kind of ambient noise of other people talking around. So the library might not work for you that way. But I'm always stunned by students who have never been in the library.
I stick
the campus, you know, especially because librarians are really cool people. You know, people think librarians are like all little old ladies with glasses down on their noses and telling them to shush with a pencil, you know, up to their lips. And, you know, librarians are research partners. There are all kinds of cool resources they can point you to. If you don't have a computer, you can typically go get one there.
Right.
You know, libraries are pretty rocking places. But if you don't, you know, you just if you have totally ruled it out as a study space, you might not know that those other resources are there.
I mean, when I was in college, I had that, like, they had these little cubby spaces. They made the library with these. They set it up so that every other seat moved around,
college,
and it was like,
though,
nooks and crannies.
There was barely
and,
a coffee shop.
I understand
atmosphere.
Never, now, even nowadays, they do the same thing. I've been into a modern college library. They have like almost like these self-contained, like, first class cabin type cube type deals where you can plug your fucking laptop in. You can, like, I camped out, man. I'm like, this is my spot. I'm going to be here. There's like a window and a wall on one side. I was there like all day.
But we call them study carols, and yeah, they are pretty freaking awesome.
Yeah, why wouldn't you want to be in a study carol? I love it. Yeah, but like, I live in a dorm with a fucking roommate and like a bunch of like smelly foot fart people and stuff. Like,
smelly foot fart people.
Just, you know, you're like 18 and shit. Study carols were my life.
Maintain a good relationship with your parents.
Meh. Oh,
you
I'm
know,
kidding.
That, that can be pretty fraught. I mean, some students come into college or university spaces and they are already coming from, you know, home situations that are perhaps not healthy or not the best. I would want to augment that to say, maintain good relationships with whoever loved you and supported you to get you there.
Good point. Good point.
You know, even if they're people who didn't go to college, even if they're people who, you know, for whom whole swaths of your experience might be foreign, if they loved you, helped you, supported you, and helped you get to that milestone, you don't want to lose those relationships. Those are the things that you're going to lean on when college isn't going well.
Yep, yep.
Yeah, there's definitely, I'm not saying I was, but I know a lot of this, like, you know, I'm going to college. Fuck you, Mom, I'm out. You know, like, wasn't quite like that, but, you know.
I mean, I had, my grandfather had a third grade education. And when I was in college, you know, there was nothing that he could talk to me about in terms of like my computer science class or, you know, the technicalities of some paper I was writing. But he could remind me of my worth and value, and that I came from a family that never needed me to be anything in particular in order to love me. And I needed that reminder a lot when I was in school.
Nice.
Try things you always wanted to try but never had the chance.
You better. You better. I mean, what better time to do it?
This is when you're supposed to do all of that.
Go do all of the things. Go take a class just because it sounds interesting. Go walk up to that person who is wearing something that you think is strange or interesting or cool. Go try out for that sport. Go to that event. I mean, the key is, you know, nine times out of ten, it's not going to hurt you.
Right.
You know, what do you have to lose?
Nothing. You don't have to have a plan.
Oh, please, please, please don't come in with a plan. Because most of the students that I work with who come in with a plan, the plan be so wrong. And I don't mean ill-intentioned. I mean based on a set of assumptions that are faulty. You know, it's sort of arrogant to assume in some ways that your 16, 17, 18-year-old self is going to necessarily know what's best for your 22-year-old self.
Listen, my plan changed because the courses that I wanted to take had like a sequential order. You had to take 101, 201, 301, like up to like 5 or whatever. And the first one, it was back in the day when you had to like dial, like go on the phone to like get your classes. Like, you had to like, you know, I'm not kidding. Like, this is my last name. Like, pick up a phone at this hour. Like, you dial in and try to fucking like book your classes on like the phone and shit. Mm-hmm. And this one class that was the starting point for this curriculum, I couldn't get in at like the beginning of like, I want to say it was like at some point, like maybe my mid sophomore or junior year. And I was like, well, now I'm committed to like a 6-year college plan. No, not going to do it. I'm graduating in 4. I can't afford it. So like my entire major changed because I couldn't get into the class that I wanted to.
You just have to stay open to the possibilities. I mean, there are so many things that I discovered as an undergraduate student that were not a part of my plan. And I'm very type A. I love a plan. I love a spreadsheet. I love a chart. I'm addicted to office supplies. Like, I'm one of those people. Like, I'm one of those people. You know, I have been for many, many years. But, I mean, I never knew I could be a dance scholar when I first started college. Nobody told me that was something that I could be. That's something that I discovered and came to much later as a result of things that I was open to. Stay open. You know, the plans you might make are just, you know, it's nice to maybe to have an idea, but you got to keep that thing flexible.
Mm-hmm. If a professor says something racist, it's okay to respond.
you better respond.
Yeah.
And not responding out of a sense of entitlement. I mean, one of the things that I hate is students who will say, well, I'm paying for your salary. It's like, you know, honey, your tuition is not being deposited into my bank account. So let's reframe this, because my taxes are subsidizing your education. So let's walk all of this back. Like, let's, you know, break up this kind of consumer student model. But you are entitled to a respectful, safe learning environment. And if people are saying and doing things that are threatening your ability to learn because the shit is overtly racist, you better say something.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Your grades are not the only thing that matters.
Oh, gosh. You know, if I didn't have to give grades, I wouldn't. Truly. Mm. I'm not invested in that kind of assessment. I do it because it's something that I'm required to do by the institution. But I always tell my students, focus on the learning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, stop asking me, is this going to be on the test? Is this going to be? Focus on the learning. Focus on mastering the skills, and the grade will happen.
The curriculum I ended up going into specifically had a very well-defined manner with which to succeed. Here's how to get an A. And I like you, like a plan. It was like, in hindsight, involved pretty much just like rote memorization and being able to like pair it back. And I don't really think that's like learning to a degree. And like, yeah, I learned, but like, is that really a skill? Is that really worthwhile? Like, okay, what the fuck? But right. I got straight A's. I loved it. I was like, oh, I can do this. Okay, here you go. Get my fucking cutie or what'd you call
and
it?
That, and that is the thing that becomes the problem. You come out with the A's, but your learning gets kind of short circuited in that kind of process. I'd rather you get some C's and come out having really learned some stuff than a transcript full of A's and, you know, an empty experience.
Yeah, the things that so I ended up dropping out of a PhD program. I got a terminal master's. And the things that within that year and a half, I was like, oh, for fuck's sake, this is not what I want to do. This is not what I thought I wanted to do. And then like doing actual research and various things, I'm like, oh, I'm wholly unprepared for this. Like, you know, it was like, okay, I got it now.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Don't let upper class persons take advantage of you.
Oh, please don't let them take advantage of you. And that can happen in so many different ways. I've seen students who want to be in with the in crowd, you know, trying too fast to develop the friend group. Basically turn themselves into mules on behalf of, you know, the popular kids. And you don't have to do that. Well,
it's very normal to have a few falling outs with your friends.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if they're real friends, y'all are going to work through that thing and come back around. But some relationships are meant to be short-lived.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's something you learn in college. Not every friendship is lifelong, and that's all right.
He ain't the one.
He's not the one. And finally, find black organizations.
You better find them as soon as you get on campus. And the truth of the matter is, at most campuses, if there are, you know, a preponderance of black students, they're already going to find you. Mm. That's what happened to me in undergrad. I remember going to school, you know, I'm working in the dining hall. Before I could say boo, the black student union folks had rolled up on me. The meeting is Tuesday. Be there at 7:00. Like, oh, okay. Yeah. Connect with student organizations generally, but connecting with a black student organization or an affinity group is really crucial, because that's going to be your community inside of the larger institution.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I would say, you know, looking back now on primarily white institutions, the organization, the hierarchy, the everything, the setup, the individuals, because they come there at 18, it's almost designed for black people to be seen, not heard kind of thing. Like the othering is just so deep. So deep, you know. And then there's like a griping about like, why are you all sitting by yourself, and why do you have your own inner fraternity council, and how come that's like segregation? Because we don't feel welcome as shits, probably. You know what I mean? Like, there's a right away. I remember in college, it was like, oh, okay. Like now, even looking back, it's, I don't want to say PWIs are a bad place for black folk, but like you said, find the organization, find other folks, and you know, find your community, find your people.
Yeah.
I mean, I got all of my degrees at PWIs, and in each instance, it was critical for me to find Black spaces because they were the only spaces where I felt like I could be all of myself. You know, and I didn't have to explain certain things. You know, you spend so much time explaining, well, why do you dress like this? Well, why is your hair like that? Why do you use these words? Well, why do you eat this food? Why are you carrying this book? Where are you, you know, it's just the constant surveillance and interrogation gets really exhausting. And so being in all Black spaces where I could talk how I talk and be how I be and play the music I love and just kind of let my hair down, you needed that. That's necessary.
My very first year, there was like a some sort of like governance whatever of the dorm meeting because there was one community TV, and this is back when like cable and, you know, MTV was new, and like maybe even like UMTV Raps was new, and they really had like the Black folk in the dormitories had to like make some sort of appeal to be like, can we please at this time, at this hour, fucking have this space be for us in BET? Like, that had to be done. Like, that was literally a request that kind of had to be made.
You know, that's sad, but I'm glad they made the request. I'm glad they did.
Yeah, but when I say made the request, it might have been like the couches mysteriously became a wall. You know what I mean? Like, stay the fuck out. Like, all right, got it.
Excellent. Well, let's get into it. Let's do this.
Let's do this indeed.
The news is coming on. The news is coming on.
So I came across this one, and I'm going to just let it play, but it's about wild parrots that have found their perch in Brooklyn.
Brooklyn?
Yeah. Mm, right, and I figure if parrots can make it in Brooklyn, anything should be able to.
Even you, maybe.
New York's a tough city to live in. It always has been.
Wait, you hear them?
The old saying, if you can make it here, you can make it anywhere. I think because the birds have made it here. I mean, they've endured this far.
This is the wild parrots of Brooklyn.
My name is Steve Baldwin, and I've been tracking the wild parrots of Brooklyn for about 10 years now.
Brooklynparrots.com.
It's not really their mating season, but Myapsida monachus. The monk parakeet. Native to Argentina, and as far as we know, something happened at Kennedy Airport in 1967 or 1968. It appears that a crate full of parrots arrived from Argentina. Something went wrong. A bunch of them escaped. They came to Brooklyn College right here.
Oh my
God. Got an
gosh.
Incredible cast of parrots here today. One, two, three, four. They're smaller than a pigeon, but larger than a sparrow. And they're the only kind of parrots that build these freestanding structures. These nests can get up to the size of small cars.
I just want to pause it. The thing that they're showing here is it's literally enormous. This nest is for, I guess, four of these parrots, parakeets over there, and it's got to weigh like 100 pounds. It's enormous.
Wow.
It's methodical work. It's twig after twig after twig. Parrots are sort of the primates in the bird world. They're smart. They're communicative. They eat almost anything that's available to them. So they're perfectly set up, really, to thrive in a place like Brooklyn. Even though it's not where they came from, they've adapted extremely well. You have to, I think, have a certain fiber of steel to make it in this town. And I think the parrots have those qualities.
So Brooklyn, gentrified as hell. Parrots cool. Black people not so much.
Good to know, Brooklyn. Wow, that's actually, that is interesting, though.
From the parrots. 60s, Argentina. Parrots.
I never would have known that there are wild parrots. Yeah. I mean, that almost sounds like a joke.
It does. Yeah, you know, or a children's book, right?
And the parrots have, like, I don't know how to say it politely, but like a little bit of Brooklyn on them.
They look a little like
they look a little haggard,
thuggish, ruggish. Yeah. The thuggish,
like
ruggish
a feather sticking out here, a little dirt over there. You know, it wasn't quite bright and green.
It's not like Rio. Is
kind of gray. Yeah, a little less Rio, a little more Brooklyn.
That's like Wild Parrots of Brooklyn sounds like the name of a band.
Yes, it does. It should be. And if anybody takes that name, make sure you pay Dr. Amin, please. Thank you.
Or let me sing backup and play small percussion.
Bam. Even better.
Takiya Amin on triangle and bongos.
For a wild parrot to Brooklyn.
Exactly.
Let's hear it.
Let's hear it.
Please clap.
You know,
I do not have what it takes to be like the front man of a band. But that is sort of like the secret wish, is to do backing vocals and like play the cowbell and the maracas and do the little two-step shimmy with the other backup dancers.
Oh, interesting. On to a little bit of Philly news. A Black Lives Matter activist put KKK hood on Frank Rizzo statue last week.
I'm here for that, dude.
So awesome. So Friday morning, two Black Lives Matter activists stood on the steps of the Municipal Services building across from City Hall, climbed a stepladder behind the 10-foot-tall statue of former Mayor Frank Rizzo, and placed a white KKK hood over his head. It was a small demonstration, more reporters and activists, but the message was loud and clear. Asa Khalif said he was a racist bigot. He was the king of bigots, and this is his crown, the KKK mask, and I think it's a hell of a match. Last week, Erica Mines of the Philly Coalition for Real Justice created a petition seeking the removal of the statue, which is the only prominent likeness of a former mayor in the city. Since that time, Rizzo supporters have signed a separate petition asking that the statue remain where it is. Both petitions have close to 1,000 signatures. Mayor Jim Kenney has said he was willing to talk about moving the statue, but that the decision won't be made by a few people overnight. The fact that the mayor was even willing to entertain tearing this down shows a lot about his administration, Khalif said. No other mayor has done that and tackled the situation. And so hopefully they'll get him taken down. He said this was the best part, though. Another woman who would only identify herself as Robin said she remembered being frightened by Rizzo as a child when he was mayor and she was a young child. Should the statue be here based on what I remember as a Philadelphian? Not here, she said. Maybe it should be moved to South Philly, where Rizzo was from, she said. At one point, a duck boat full of tourists drove past. As passengers turned around to snap pictures, the announcer was heard saying, "Oh, Frank," and explained that Rizzo was a former mayor before the vehicle drove off.
Wow.
Hilarious. And someone else says, I remember getting into political fights, but Rizzo was, but I didn't believe Rizzo was a racist. Like, okay.
You know, I have to say, though, that story makes me smile because it's such a Philly story.
It's so Philly.
That's such a Philly thing to do. I love Philadelphia.
And that was the Real Justice, Coalition for Real Justice was awesome. I love those guys.
Yeah, they're great people.
You know, when we were, before we got kind of like on, before we were recording, you were talking about, you know, we're just people that live in my phone and like, you're real and like, you know, like, whatever. Like, I'm not going to imitate Dickie because you know how it is. Ain't gonna do it.
Next week.
Ain't gonna do it right now. Mm-hmm. But, so we've had that, we had a couple of different times where it's like, I don't say like creepy, but like, again, we've talked on the show, like people I think know us, like they feel like they know us because they hear intimate conversations, but then it's really conversations with me and Leslie that like we let them hear like in a passive way. So they're absorbing all the stuff that I don't really know and I don't remember and I don't have like the same, it's like not a dialogue. I don't have a dialogue with that person. Right. So we've been to a couple of places where like, oh my God, you're the initial John. I'm like, oh yeah, weird.
Yeah, because I always say things like, oh, and your anniversary is this date. And or they'll mention some really obscure thing. And yeah. I'll be like, I don't even remember that. I'm surprised that you remember that. But I am like that with lots of people's podcasts that I listen to all the time. So
yeah, yeah. I'm the same. I mean, I probably listen to more podcasts than I watch TV. Mm-hmm. So you develop this kind of weird relationship where you think you have this relationship because you listen in, you know, on these people's lives. Mm-hmm. And but you don't know them,
right?
Don't know them, so you can't roll up on folks.
I just know? Make friends with all the podcasts that I like, and then I'm like, okay. And then if they don't want to be friends, I'm like, fuck your podcast.
Hello, you're hilarious. Well, shout out to the Coalition for Real Justice in Philly. Yeah, we miss y'all.
We miss all of you guys. You guys.
That was
awesome.
I remember the first couple of meetings that they ever did. I just thought like, oh man, this is
gonna be rough.
Not rough, just I thought that was like kind of how things were, I would say done, but.
I mean, you have to get in there. You have to actually do the work. It's not easy to build coalition with that many people and continue doing work together. It's not easy to do. So shout out to all of them for sure.
I just remember when I was a grad student at Temple and I was teaching as an adjunct person. You know, the adjuncts and grad students were unionized.
Ooh.
And so you would go to the union meetings, TUGSA, Temple University Graduate Student Association, and the logo was a fist with a pencil in it.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. It was like, I am in the right place.
Yes.
Yeah, in fact, that was Temple where they ran Dr. Montero
yeah.
out.
Man, that yep. whole situation. He was so important too.
So they need that kind of unionization and stuff, because wasn't he even tenured and shit?
It was crazy. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
yeah, he was tenured. Shout out to you, Dr. Montero.
By yeah, me. and that's the and I have to be honest, my I don't know how to describe it, but sort of like some of my understanding, like the black scholars that I've been exposed to, tend to be less radical, less of the Dr. Monteros, because of shit like what happens to him, right? Like okay. the more well, radical.
I think that's
folks.
True of everybody.
Yeah, sure.
That's the great thing about Philly, man. They got some fucking amazing like old head radicals there. And you get to steep yourself, like you get to sit in a room and on a monthly basis have one-on-one conversations with Ramona Africa, and that's Philly.
For Rizzo.
That's how Philly is. Yeah.
That's how Philly is. There are only five people. There are only at the time there were only five PhD programs in dance in the country. There are a couple more now, but I knew that I had to go to Temple. I mean, one, because that giant ass logo with the T must be for Takiya. But, just to be in Philly that has such a strong history of, black radical activism and scholarship, there was no other place for me to be.
Right on. I think, if I'm not mistaken, Dr. Montero is like the foremost authority on like W.E.B. Du Bois, is he not? Like
he's
definitely one of the foremost Du Boisian scholars in the country. Yep.
Yeah, and like, hey, let's kick him out of the.
And he's funny as hell.
And just a great person. So let's run him out.
Hilarious. Mm-hmm. So on to a slightly more icky story. You know what? Let me just play this real quick. I'll just play it.
When that train rumbles in, usually it means you can stop fanning yourself on board. But about 10 times a day during the past week on the older R62 subway cars along the 1, 3, and 6 lines, commuters have found no air conditioning.
It's brutal.
Oh, wait. Especially that's not when what you're I wanted to play at all. This is stupid. Anyways, really what I wanted to talk about was the fact that it was hot enough last week in New York City for cockroaches to take off and fly.
No, and I can't see. Did we have this conversation on this show, or was this off the air?
We just talked about it ourselves. So, DNA Info reports that the steamy conditions outside could inspire the American cockroaches that inhabit New York City and other parts of the tri-state area to take flight. In hot steam tunnels, something with the temperature and the humidity encourages them to fly. When it's warm and steamy, that seems to be what they like. Oh, says entomologist Ken Schumann. Oh my gosh. All American cockroaches have wings and have the ability to take flight, but don't typically do so unless they're in humid climates. It's a common sight in the deep south, where some flying roaches are called palmetto bugs. We had those. And the first one took off and flew in our house. Drew about shit himself.
I started screaming, they fly, they fly. Oh my God, they fly. Oh my God, they fly. It came right at me. It scared the shit out of me.
Because of the abundance of trash cans and other food supplies, they typically don't need to use their wings. But with this weekend's conditions, don't be surprised if the city slicking roaches take after their southern brethren.
As if fucking New York needed any more like dings in their like bad column. Flying roaches. Fuck out of here, New York.
Oh my God.
Can you imagine? Just the sheer number of them. Just imagine them all like taking flight.
A swarm. A fucking swarm.
Just one building. Just one like construction site. Just them all like flying in the air at once.
God. I'm itchy.
Oh, that's decimates. Like some Old Testament Lotus.
It's like The Strain. That's what it would look like, that TV show, The Strain.
I mean, it's a perfect setup, though, for like a sci-fi, the roaches unite and reclaim the city kind of thing.
In fact, I think, it's funny. I think I remember the DJ Older, Daniel Jose Older, has his most recent novel, Shadow Shaper. I think there's like a roach man, like a dude that's like made up of roaches or insects of some sort as one of the villains in the book. It's a very good book, by the way. If you like sci-fi type of stuff, it's very good.
What was that Meryl Streep Silkwood Shower?
It's set in Brooklyn. Anyway, so be careful out there, New York.
Mm. Mm.
Yeah. So, yeah, wasn't it you were in the news, Leslie? That's probably a little much, but like sideways some of your work was. But publishers have delayed a YA novel amid a row over invented black, I'm going to put air quotes on this, street dialect. Mm. So When We Was Fierce by E. Charlton Trujillo.
Stop right there.
What?
The title is When We Was Fierce.
Okay, keep going.
By E. Charlton Trujillo. Mm-hmm. Uses invented street dialect slammed by one reviewer as rife with insult and lack of awareness. Mm-hmm. So I'll just say E. Charlton Trujillo, a woman, I guess, of Mexican-American descent, but for all intents and purposes, I would say maybe
white presenting.
Thank you. I hate saying that. It's not my. The publication of young adult novel When We Was Fierce has been postponed by its author and publisher following harsh criticism of the deeply offensive invented black vernacular in its narrated. Trujillo's verse novel tells of a teenager, Theo, who sees a brutal gang attack on a disabled boy and decides to intervene. Let's see. Released the novel August 9th, has delayed it following controversy, said largely in street dialect by Mexican-American Trujillo, author of an award-winning book, Fat Angie. Trujillo said in an interview that right from the jump, I could hear the music of T's world that hadn't existed in YA before. So this is the author. Slang can become dated quick, so I had a unique opportunity to incorporate some slang along with a new vernacular. When We Was Fierce initially drew glowing pre-publication reviews from book magazines, including Kirkus, calling it a compassionate, forceful look at a heartbreak of choices.
That happens with all of these fuck-ass books, by the way.
Black boys and men face at the lethal intersection of poverty and gang culture.
Oh, get out of here. Yeah. Get out of here.
That's a sentence they wrote that. A compassionate and forceful look at the heartbreaking choices these black boys and men face at the lethal intersection of poverty and culture. I won't go through more of the like glowing reviews. But then it was the blogosphere. There was definitely a backlash. And let's see here. Where's the actual? I can't find the actual.
What are you looking for?
The negative. There's a lot of backlash.
There's a bunch. Yeah, the on Edith Campbell's blog. Shout out to her. She's awesome. I think Jennifer Baker wrote the librarian. Jennifer Baker. She wrote the bad one.
I don't know why it's not on my page.
Anyways, I think she said something like that. The one where it's fierce constructed Ebonics. Ugh. Deeply offensive and extremely hard to read without having to reread. Not for interest, but for comprehension.
See, shit like that makes me want to fight. Mm-hmm.
She said that the narration in Fierce shows a blatant disregard and lazy vocabulary creation that's continually insulting in the hopes that it's avant-garde. And slammed the novel's references to the Black Lives Matter movement, saying, quote, it feels like a carrot dangled to make the character seem more real. But for those of us living this life and this fear in real time, it's another flippant element in a text rife with insult and lack of awareness.
Yeah, that's not good.
And then Edith's own review says, every major reviewer who embraced this book was impressed by the language Charlton Trujillo made up for the contemporary characters in the book. But asked, who makes up language when portraying real people living in a contemporary society? Just how entitled is that?
Yeah, that's I think the continuing defense of it is like, well, it's authors, what they do, that's their privilege. And I say maybe, but not this author and not that.
Let me tell you one thing. If I have learned nothing in the last year and a half that I've been lamentably butting heads with the publishing world, especially YA and children's publishing world, I have never met. You know, I was trying to draw this comparison, and I would say the Second Amendment is to gun rights advocates as free speech is to YA and the publishing world, because it turns into this, like, there's no sense of reason that you can talk to these people about without this, like,
it's censure,
free speech. And it's like, yes, but that doesn't mean that you can say whatever fuck shit you want and people should have to look at that.
Yeah, can and should aren't the same thing.
Like, I mean, and I just don't, I mean, what that reveals to me too is just how distant you are from black people.
Oh, yeah.
There is so much scholarship and lived experience around the way we speak, the ways in which we speak, because that's not monolithic either, that you don't have to invent some book. Like, what are you doing? You know, and to do that under the guise of being avant-garde is so, Yeah, see, shit like that make me want to come to your house.
Yeah.
I can't.
Honestly, and what you said about not being around black people, like, I don't know if, like, all white people, I can only speak for myself, right? I only speak for myself. There definitely was a period of time where I felt erroneously that my ability to connect with other black people included my using AAVE. Like, I really thought that, like, you know, I don't know when, how many, you know, many, many years ago, but, like, that's a degree of, like, you know, I don't know, fuckassery you go through. Like, I don't believe in color. To, like, you know, I'm going to use AAVE to, like, be down, right? Like, that,
and,
like, you go
and
through
I'm going to say, and I'm just going to say, you know, since you brought that up, I never had white boys hit on me until graduate school.
Mm.
And maybe I would have been down with it, except they always did that.
Use AAVE.
It was like I'm going to use this, what I think you speak like, to try to show you that I'm down. And it's like, you don't have to do that. You could just be who you are.
I'll tell you this. I've gotten a lot of mileage at being the goofy fucking butt of a lot of jokes by not knowing AAVE. Just for real. A ton. Lizzie, her friend was...
I'm mad you know all of them now, because yeah. I can't continue to make fun of you. It's one of my favorite things.
Her friend was acting a fool, and she goes, oh my God, look at her showing her ass on the dance floor. I'm like, what, she got her pants down? What, she got her ass?
Oh, no.
For real, for real.
And then there was, Don't Sleep was one that you really were like, what do you mean don't sleep? I'm not tired. Okay.
That's actually kind of precious.
That's what I'm saying. I get a lot more. Listen, white dudes. I get a lot more sugar, a lot more love from being like goofy and uninformed, but genuine, right? But
yeah.
I don't know shit.
Look, we appreciate the real. You know, I don't know if I would have let Tyler or Connor take me out for Hot Wings. And I might have if he hadn't have been all douchey about trying to approach me using this pantomime fake ass slang. You know, you don't have to do that. You could just, you know, authenticity is always attractive. Always.
It's true. Mm. I think they just sometimes are. Amazingness overwhelms them.
But they did reference, as I said, this delay follows a decision by other children publishers to delay a birthday cake for George Washington earlier this year after it was criticized for the dangerously rosy impression of the relationship between slaves and slave owners. And that's unattributed. Whose quote is that? I hope that's not yours, Leslie. That would make me disappointed.
It might be mine. Who knows? I don't know.
And then last year's author, Emily Jenkins, apologizing for the picture book, A Fine Dessert for George. But yeah. YA's not doing so good. Speaking of not doing so good, I feel terrible. Our old and also flying cockroaches, our old state, Louisiana, the flooding there is just unreal.
Oh my gosh. It's horrible.
I mean, like a trillion, the number of inches, there was like 24 inches they got
in 48 hours.
In under 2 days.
It's crazy.
Unbelievable.
I mean, really, like I've been like seeing even just the images. It's just,
and I think people don't quite even have a good grasp that like just 52,000 homes, right? 50,000 homes. That's a major city. That's a huge metropolitan population that is now homeless.
Well, I saw a quarter million people that talked about what Louisiana really looks like because it's lost its boot.
Yeah,
that it is no longer connected to one another. Due to, you know, depending who you talk to, whatever, but due to global warming and environmental issues, you know, we've seen these wetlands just completely be degraded. And what happens is then we lose land and the water rises. And then obviously all of that contributes to bigger storms, worse hurricanes, all of those things that happen in the Gulf. Anyways, but it's interesting because topographers have not updated any. I mean, they update maps all the time, but they seem to keep forgetting to draw Louisiana correctly on these new maps out here because it's too visual, too much of a visual cue of just how dire things are. In the Gulf Coast.
Is that, and I saw later in the article, they said that only 20% of people in Louisiana have flood insurance. And I think that there are certain areas you live in, if it's drawn by FEMA a certain way, the flood zone, you have no choice. Like the bank won't loan you the money for your mortgage without getting federal flood insurance. There isn't an option for you if you're in like a zone that's like prone to flooding. So maybe they're not having done this properly is allowing people now to be really kind of ruined.
See, what's killing me is that I have a friend who was posting on Facebook about how her parents, who are certainly up in years, had to evacuate their home. But she also has siblings who are there, And she knows that they evacuated too, but it doesn't seem like everybody is back together. She isn't sure where certain family members, I mean, this is stultifying. And the silence around it in mainstream media, if I didn't have social media, I don't think I would know about
it. Oh, yeah, they don't want to talk about any of this. No way.
And it's I imagine there's a fair number of, because this is central Louisiana now, there are people that like, oh, I moved away from New Orleans, right? The hurricane, you know, destroyed us, and we moved inland. We got away from that shit. Now we're just getting flooded out again.
Imagine.
It's terrible.
I cannot imagine. It's painful.
It is. It's really painful. We're praying for all of them. And I'll share these links to a couple of stories. One there, and you know, I don't actually have a lot of hands on where to send anything yet. But once I do, I'll definitely be pushing that out to folks.
Because
I don't trust the Red Cross or FEMA. I don't trust any of those.
I really wish.
Don't give your money there. Keep your money till you hear from somebody that you trust. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it's kind of nuts. What was your thing? Oh, you already talked about that. So Tim Cook, this I found very interesting. I actually almost put this under white people, but we have a good white people story. So
there's always a white people story.
Tim Cook addresses Apple's U.S. taxes, says no repatriation without, quote, fair rate.
Oh, now he's going to fucking hold his billions and trillions hostage.
Yeah, yeah. He said that he struck back at critics of the iPhone maker's strategy to avoid paying U.S. taxes, telling the Washington Post in a wide-ranging interview that the company would not bring that money back from abroad unless there was a fair rate. Along with other multinational companies, the tech giant has been subject to criticism. I hear you.
Is that me? Everyone. That's not me. That's you, Leslie.
MSNBC.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Hold on a second here. I got to figure out what's playing here. I don't know what it is.
They do that now. They just those are the autoplay ads.
They autoplay
because they want to get the CPM on that. That's cost per thousand.
It's terrible.
It's like it's valuable. They want to.
Well,
CNN's
it's terrible
the worst
for the reader. Anyways, sure. Along with other multinational companies, the tech giant has been subject to criticism over a tax strategy that allows them to shelter profits made in the U.S. From the U.S. corporate tax rate, which at 35% is the highest in the developed world. And of course, people have lambasted them as a tax dodger. They've parked more than $2 trillion offshore, which is subject to more favorable tax rates. And he says it is the current tax law. It's not a matter of being patriotic or not patriotic. It doesn't go that the more you pay, the more patriotic you are. The tax law right now says we can keep that profit in Ireland or we can bring it back.
Yeah. And so, you know, this whole like the thing they have to do for the shareholders and it's this, we have to do this to maximize that. I get it. But there has to be some middle ground. You can't have trillions of fucking dollars of money you've made off of selling shit to our citizens kept offshore.
Well, their other argument is that most of their sales are most of the money they make is outside of the country. But here's the thing. My whole thing about just the brazenness with which this white CEO is able to with the running the most profitable company in the history of the world.
Tell it.
Say, yeah, nah, I'm not going to pay taxes.
No,
and yet,
hold it hostage. Worse. I'll bring that money back if you give me a fucking good deal.
And
literally.
Yet, black people are lazy. This is the shit I'm talking about, though. It's just how things get positioned just so.
And if not only is he not lazy, he's thought of as this is a brilliant strategy. That Donald Trump would be, that's a good move. You got to do what's good for the shareholders. And
hey, look, he hasn't released his taxes for a reason, so.
That's because he took
it's just frustrating because let us stop paying our taxes tomorrow.
Word.
Okay, let us stop right now, okay, before the phone hit the base, they at the door.
Absolutely.
That's the island.
Just
Leslie's
the nerve. Gonna... Just the nerve of it.
The nerve of it. And to do the interview just to be like, yeah, well, no. Mm-mm-mm.
Get that island you're talking about. And it doesn't have to exist in reality. It'll just be like a small little
island.
Yeah, Bitcoin.
A Bitcoin island.
Like, I paid my taxes to Blackistan. And all my money's in Blackistan.
It's
and you can't. What is it?
It's not Blackistan.
What would the island be? I don't know.
The
whatever it is.
The island would be Beyonce.
All my money's in Beyonce, and see what happened is if you want it, you're going to have to give me my constitutionally afforded to rights, not to be killed and beat up and all that other fuck ass shit.
Beyonce stand.
And then you can have my Beyonce stand tax money back.
Yeah, there you go.
Until then, we
I'm holding it for you in escrow, but you have to act right.
You can call that the episode, Beyonce stand escrow.
Freaking terrible. I mean, just the nerve of it. I'm going to do this interview to give you the middle finger and say, yeah, we got this money, but nah.
But yeah, nah. Yeah. But nah. Give me a deal. Come on. Give me a deal.
Meanwhile, our schools are being stripped of all
$2 trillion.
All of their, languages, music, all of, it's just egregious.
That's so much money, $2 trillion.
So much.
Honestly, my maths aren't good enough to do, 20% of $2 trillion. But is that I don't know, $200, $400 billion? I don't know how many money. It's so much money.
It's a whole bunch of damn money. It's an egregiously large amount of money. It's money that ain't here. What it is.
Yeah. Tim Cook can eat a bag of dicks. That's crazy. Absolutely crazy. Do we have some Olympics news? This is the worst. The Olympics have been pretty decent this year. I ain't gonna be too shitty. But Leslie, you talk about this a little tidbit.
Yeah, so I don't know if you guys all heard about the quote-unquote shooting at JFK Airport. It turns out that it wasn't a shooting at all. It was just merely fans clapping and banging after Usain Bolt's history-making sprint that caused all the ruckus.
Blah, 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 big up, big up.
Drew, this is when you do the horn.
Oh, see, I was doing my...
You're fired.
I love that news. I love it.
It is pretty sweet news.
It's
that's amazing. With no damn shooting, just happy people.
Usain Bolt fucking
The initial
won.
Call came in at 9:30 p.m., which is about a minute after Bolt won his 100-meter race, securing a gold medal. There were no injuries reported, though the FAA places a ground stop at the airport. So that sounds very innocuous and very, on the up and up, whatever. But if you hear from the people who actually were caught in this shooting that never was and has already been forgotten, they'll tell you a very different story. A woman wrote in New York Mag this week. She said, when the first stampede began, my plane had just landed. It started apparently with a group of passengers awaiting departure in the JFK Airport Terminal 8 cheering Usain Bolt's superhuman 100-meter dash. The applause sounded like gunfire somehow or to someone. Really, it only takes one. According to some reports,
one white woman
screamed that she saw a gun. The cascading effect was easier to figure when people started running. A man I met later on the tarmac said they plowed through the metal poles strung through the terminal to organize lines, and the metal clacking of the tiles of the floor sounded like gunfire. Because the clacking was caused by the crowd, wherever you were and however far you'd run already, it was always already right around you.
Because all the stanchions are falling over.
Clink, 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 clink,
clack, 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 they're falling over. Get the fuck.
Yes. There was a second stampede I heard sometime later in Terminal 4. I was caught up in two separate ones, genuine stampedes, both in Terminal 1. The first was in a long, narrow, long-ceiling second-floor hallway approaching customs that was so stuffy with restless passengers that it felt like a cattle call. Even before the fire alarm, the screaming and all the contradictory squeals that sent people running and yelling and barreling over each other's, well as the dropped luggage, passports, and crouched, panicked women who just wanted to take shelter between their knees and hope for it or them to pass. The second was later after security guards had just hustled hundreds of us off the tarmac directly into passport control when a woman in a hijab appeared at the top of the flight of stairs yelling out for a family member, it seemed, who had been separated from her in the chaos. The crowd seemed to rise up squealing and rush for the two sets of small double doors.
Because she was in a fucking hijab. Are you fucking kidding me? Are you fucking kidding me?
I can't stand this.
Oh, my God. I'm not saying I understand, but I'm trying to, try to be empathetic to maybe if I was in a airport. I don't know. I don't have a TV. I'm not in front of a TV. I don't know what's going on. From some other area of the airport, I hear a large crowd scream. I hear a noise. I don't know if it's jubilation or what. Then I see people moving. Whoa, people are running. And then I start hearing clack, 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 clack. Me, I'm going to get the fuck out of there. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to stick around and be like, maybe it's tangents. Maybe it's Usain Bolt. I don't know. I'm probably going to pick up and run. I ain't going to lie.
Well, I mean, I always invoke the black people rule, which is if everybody starts running, you just go. and then you find out what you were running for.
You know, I love that about you, Takiya. You'd be right by my side. You'd be passing me. Oh, my God. What are we running for? I don't know. I got to go. You knock me down.
Look, I don't know. But we ask questions later.
Knock down that big lurch-looking dude.
Sounds to me like it sounded like gunshots to people who don't know what gunshots sound like.
Probably.
I'm sorry. That's what it sounds like to me. It sounds like people who thought it was gunshots who don't normally hear what gunshots sound like.
That's probably true, too. So I know this. I actually didn't have this in the notes, Drew, but this Ryan Lochte
his mugging
situation is turning a little left for our boy Ryan.
Oh no!
Yes,
Ryan Lochte and James Fegan ordered to stay in Brazil. A judge in Brazil issued an order preventing U.S. swimmers Ryan Lochte and James Fegan from leaving the country after police queried their evidence in a robbery case. Lochte, Fegan, and two other members of the U.S. swimming team said they had been robbed at gunpoint in a taxi in Rio, but police say their account of when they arrived at the Olympic Village does not square with CCTV recordings. He arrived back before the judge issued anything. He already left the country, by the way. He was never asked to remain for further investigation or for any other purpose after he met with Brazilian authorities, after he gave them a statement, and his Twitter account shows he is home. But Lochte first told the U.S. TV network NBC about it, but the IOC spokesman said that it was absolutely not true, and the U.S. Olympic Committee later confirmed the swimmers' accounts. Lochte told police that he and teammates Fegan, Gunnar Bentz, and John Conger had attended a party at a French Olympic team's hospitality house on Saturday evening. He said that during their return drive to the Olympic Village, their cab was stopped by men posing as police officers. One of the men held a gun to his head, Lochte said, and robbed him of his money and personal belongings. But the police investigating the case say they found no evidence of the robbery. They also point to inconsistencies in the swimmers' accounts. Lochte and Fegan told police that they and the fellow swimmers returned to the Olympic Village at 4 a.m. local time, but CCTV recordings appear to show them returning at 7 a.m. local time. Police say they have not been able to track down the driver who said the swimmers drove them back to the village. They also said that Fegan and Lochte gave two different accounts of how many men robbed them. And they have requested a search warrant for the rooms the swimmers stayed in to examine his mobile phone. And they were unable to accommodate that because, as I said, they've already left Brazil.
So I'll let Takiya illuminate and guess, but something happened. They don't want people to know. And whatever happened, saying they got robbed at gunpoint was better.
So I'm saying you could say you got robbed in gunpoint and not go on NBC and tell Billy Bush a lie. But Ryan Lochte's an idiot, so.
I mean, I think the trumping up of the obviously really sketchy and suspicious story is what bothers me. You didn't have to go do all this extra press about it.
You could have just said you got pickpocketed, like straight up. Okay, it's Rio. You got pickpocketed. Big deal.
He's petty.
He's just dumb.
Peppermint petty.
I feel like it's... I want to say like prostitutes or something. Like he got robbed, like buying like, you know, like coke off of like the wrong like person or something, and then like, oh, I got robbed. Oh, really? Okay, sure you did. At gunpoint in the favela where all the prostitutes and okay, sure you did, Lochte. Got it.
Sure, Lochte.
That's exactly what happened.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Got it.
Yes. That's it for the Olympics.
It just seems the way he handled it was just extra for reasons unknown.
Yeah, especially because he was like, and I was the one that refused to go down, and then they held the gun to my face. I was like, whatever, dude, whatever.
It's just like
I mean, he told it like he was Bruce Willis. Yeah, like, straight up, like that was
he cast
himself in a very dramatic scene.
who's the guy, the news person that got demoted or taken off the air because he made up some...
Oh, Brian Williams, who's back on the air, just to be clear on that.
But remember, Brian Williams is like, they went and like deconstructed the lie, and it went from like, I was nearby, I was on one of the boats that got shot at, I was on the boat that got shot at, I was hit in the leg.
It just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
It's what Lochte did, dude. Yeah. It was fun.
Oh, Lochte.
You know what it might have been?
Put the game clock at 4:20. smoke weed every day.
Might have been on that. He's done.
It might have been. It's over. The game is over.
Could have been.
Could have been. What is the weed news?
I'm just not even going to go to the article. I'm just going to say it's some fuck ass bullshit. The government said they were going to look at the classification of marijuana. It's currently a class one, schedule one drug, which means it literally has no medicinal effects, despite it being a medically approved drug in, I think, 41 some odd states now. The DEA says there's no medicinal effects, so that still means a dearth of paucity and almost impossibility of research and actual funding and ability to, look at this other than a drug, which is a fucking shame. The DEA continues to be stupid.
Yes, very stupid.
That's ridiculous. And, I'm not personally, a fan of the Mary Jane myself. But this is getting a little ridiculous.
It is. It's just such a waste of everyone's money, time, effort, and energy. And that's really what is the most egregious about it.
It's politics and stupid.
Yeah. I mean, and I probably feel like this even more because I lived in Colorado for a little while. And everybody was high except me. And everybody was fine.
Yeah, well, we already know since they've had legalized marijuana there, not just medical, but legalized for anybody.
Yeah,
they've seen a 25% decrease in opiate overdoses.
They've seen a decrease in domestic violence.
Literally, all of these things. It's like, oh, right. You know why? Because that's what alcohol used to do to people.
Yeah, listen, I've been around my family. I got a history of of abusers and imbibers and all kinds of various things, right? And ain't nobody getting fucking high and like starting fights. That's just not how it goes.
Nope.
I've never been anywhere where somebody gets really, really high and like smashes a bong and is like, oh, I'm gonna kick your ass, I'm so high. Like, that just isn't how it goes.
Colorado is a state where you can officiate your own marriage. Oh. So people might just, you don't have to have like a clergy person or anything. You can just go in the woods, say what you want, file some paperwork, and be married.
Wow.
So at most you might have some folks, they're going to get high. They're going to hike the incline. They might get married at the top of a mountain.
We're married, babe. Yeah.
On a post-it. It's going to be like Grey's Anatomy, man. It's going to be awesome. Man.
Right.
Exactly.
Nobody is hurting anybody out here.
We're gonna go up and we're gonna put a slack line across the boulder ridge and we're gonna get on the slack line and then we're gonna get naked.
Slack line.
Naked slack line high marriage. Call that Denver style.
Banana.
I forgot this week in hashtag.
Yeah, this week in hashtag. So the first one's a funny one, and it's hashtag white liberal proverbs. Which popped off a couple of days ago. At Brandy Nico was the one who coined it. Somebody actually, always the self, had tweeted, I am magically exempt from the racist society that socialized me. White liberal proverb. And then Brandy Nico said, I'm dead. This should be a hashtag. Hashtag white liberal proverbs. And it took off from there. And so I'll read a few choice ones. Neoliberal body said, I cannot be racist. I voted for President Obama. White liberal proverb.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Nika Pamela says, everything I have achieved completely on my own. Mm-hmm. She also says, government Perfect. Has done nothing for me.
Yeah, I mean, come on. I didn't own slaves. That's gotta be in there, right?
Katie Love the Kid says, eating meat is the same as enslaving people.
Oh, God. Mm-hmm. Oh, God. Mm-hmm, Perfect. Mm-hmm.
Always the Self has quite a few choice ones. I am the one pristine snowflake untouched by systematic racism. I don't see color. I can't be racist because my one black friend said I'm not racist. I can't be racist because I'm a good person and good people can't be racist.
Mm-hmm.
Brandy mm-hmm. Nika herself says, a protest picture on social media is worth 1,000 self-baked ally cookies. DN_ Charles says, I don't care if you're black, white, red, yellow, purple, green. Yeah. Brandy Nico says, I'm woke. I went on a mission trip to Mexico once. The kids loved me. We did it for Jesus, but we were the real winners.
What do they call that? Cutematarian instead of humanitarian?
Yeah, cutematarian.
It was cutematarian.
Cutematarian. Taylor K says, well, obviously I don't mean you.
That might be my fave. I mean, Takiya, you're not like the others.
Mm-hmm. I've done so much for you people. How dare you call me racist?
Oh, you people.
It's I love the you people. Oh, yeah, the you people.
You people. Mm. It's this is Elon James. He says, it's better to be racist than to call out said racism and be considered divisive.
You know, I'm just going to do full disclosure here. Somebody asked me once if I had a celebrity crush. And the truth is, the closest I come to a celebrity crush is Elon James White.
No comment.
You like them hats? Is it the hat? What is it? Is the chapeau? His hat game strong.
Well, I have to say, hat game definitely, you know. And I have a thing. I have a thing for white faced Negroes. I think. I think that might actually be it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Takeda Sweet says, "I mean, I want to live in Brooklyn, but not Brooklyn. You know."
That's too good.
I got
too good.
I gotta start. See, she got this thing for Elon, and I remember when I used some words that Takiya like that. I gotta figure out. I gotta get my vocabulary game for Takiya. Mm-hmm.
What's the word? Sure there's got to be an app for that.
Well, word sure of the day. Is. I'm sure there is.
Absolutely. Of course, the trolls started going, but I'll just do one more. In the words of Martin Luther King Jr., that'll be the last one I'll do. But it's funny. If you
and you know why these are so perfect, though, Leslie?
Why?
Because I'm sitting here thinking about how many of them I've heard at church.
Oh, all of them. Literally, Kenny and I keep joking that we're going to do white UU say to black UUs. Like, you know, they used to do those, like, shit people say videos, and we keep threatening that we're gonna do one. Maybe we can do it at the convening. That would be fun. Speaking of which,
we should do it.
We just announced the very first Black Lives UU convening will happen March 9th through the 12th in New Orleans. Check out our website blacklivesuu.com for more info on that. It's coming soon. Very exciting.
That's very exciting. Very exciting.
Of course, as soon as I put it up, I was like, fuck, now we have to do it immediately. Like my blood pressure just like went burr, just like that. As soon as I sent the first save the date, I was like, shit, now we're really
doing official.
It. So the next hashtag I wanted to mention was no DAPL. We've seen Native American protesters disrupting work on the Dakota Access Pipeline. It's been really amazing stand that they've taken on horseback in some cases, coming out outside of their tribal lands to block this. 16 members, I think, of the Standing Rock Sioux tribe have been arrested so far, and between 200 and 400 people have gathered in total, some on horseback, others beating drums close to the reservation, the Sioux tribe's reservation there.
Am I not mistaken? They're digging on, like, sacred ground.
They are.
Like, sacred tribal, like, this is, and like, the you know, you can't talk about what's happening devoid of the historical context of colonization and taking their land and literally treaties. This is land that was like, okay, here's a treaty, reservation, this is your fucking land, and here we go again. You know?
Yeah, the new pipeline will also span land dotted with sacred Native American sites between the Cannonball and Heart Rivers. John Eagle Sr. said, it's a historic place of commerce where enemy tribes camped peacefully within sight of each other. In the area are sacred stones where our ancestors went to pray for good direction, strength, and protection for the coming year. The stones are still there, and our people still go there today, although the pipeline will not directly cross an environmentally protected area or federally reserved indigenous land. Under current proposals, it will pass within half a mile of the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation and traverse 209, let me say that again, traverse 209 rivers and creeks. How the fuck are they going to maintain with any sort of success, 100% infallible success, connections of an oil fucking pipeline across 209 rivers and creeks?
Come on now.
Come on.
That don't even make that don't come on now. That don't even make no sense.
My plumber can't do that in the sink.
And is this
I'm just saying, and that's not a lot of water. And I'm just moving water and some eggshells occasionally in the garbage disposal. Anyways, check out that hashtag. Lots of really amazing First Nations and Native American organizers and activists are tweeting and writing about this, but we should be amplifying this because it too is steeped in both colonialism and supremacy. And so it's important that we support these efforts, of course. And as we know, environmental issues always affect Black and brown and poor people first before they affect anybody else. The last hashtag might be my favorite hashtag of the year so far, just saying. And it's the So Gone Challenge. And those who don't know, So Gone is probably my favorite Monica song, I have to say. It's just so good. And so the rapper Chance, what's his name?
I don't know. You're not.
Isn't he Chance the Rapper?
Chance, is it just Chance the Rapper?
I think it is.
I know I officially sound like an old fogey. Chance the Rapper?
I have no idea.
Yeah. Well, anyways, he started it off by doing a rap to his baby mama, his girlfriend, and it turned into a whole thing. Let's listen to Chance first, and then we'll come back. This song is one of my favorite songs. Anyways, just.
Thanks for filming this. I wrote this for you today. Channel, aka Mr. Windy City. Remix! I got the baddest chick on the planet. She ain't mixed, but folks be asking if she half Hispanic. She complain about the baby weight, but I ain't panic. Since she got pregnant, she been showing crack like Bad Mechanic. I rub her feet, I put in work like I was Robin Fenty. The only chick that I hold as much as Traveler Kinsley. I sit with her and watch Black Ink and Being Married. But never loving hip-hop, that shit get kinda scary. She standing about 6 feet, she used to hoop it lame. I tried to stick her the other day and got my ankle sprained. I fell deep, tried to leave, but you know the way that you learn best is leaving out the garage and getting hit with that U-turn test. So if you got a girl and she's sexy and she's grown, stay your ass at home before you end up all alone. Leave the toilet seat down, always keep your phone. Ask my BM, she got her own ringtone and she was singing, oh, and I love.
Okay, so that was the first one that kicked it off, and Monica tweeted it, and so did Miss Missoon Elliott, who produced the song, the original, and was just like, oh, this is so cute, we love it, you guys should do it too, and use hashtag So Gone Challenge. And so here are some good ones. This one's from Il Capitano 94.
Yeah. I couldn't sleep. But everybody on my timeline is rapping on this beat, so I hopped about the sheets and said I might as well do a freestyle for a silly late night tweet. My relationship with hip hop is dope, Bobby and Whitney. Your top five, dead or alive, top five couldn't mess with me. Swear I'm the biggest threat to emerge from the Bluff City. Got a perfect way with these words, B. Call me Scritty Politti. If that went over your head, homie, you outclassed. Spit it like Andre, cause this big boy grew up an outcast. Know you expect it to rain, but I'ma make it drought fast. Eating all your hearts out and dancing the grave when the gal pass. Words holier than the ministers, but I'm left-handed. So every jab I write is straight sinister. Kirk spectacular, most verbose vernacular. Bloodshed on the mic, my raps attracting sharks and Dracula. I can kill all your favorite rappers with my ABCs backwards. At my zenith, you're executed with verbal subtle trickery. Silence rhetoric quickly, powerfully on the niggas. Man, listen, Kirk jams is history. Godly flow emitting the demonic chakra, beautifully awkward. I ain't gotta force it to be a hero, I'm Chewbacca. I'm the microphone raven. Only takes 3 words to end your world like I'm raving. I'm just a cyborg robbing fire from your stars just so I could go beast boy. Been a titan since my teens, boy. These white pawns can't impersonate a black king, boy.
Nice.
All right,
that was good.
I wish I could rap. I wish I could rap.
I was watching all these and I was like, man, I wish I could rap too. All right, here's this one is it's Jay Young, and I'll just spoiler alert, it's a white dude. Here we go.
Yeah. She got a Oakland booty, got a face like a Leah. I'ma chasing on a Libra like a cheetah does a zebra. So we gon' have a juke jam, tryna be up on my Viva. The way that sundress hit your curves, go ahead and charge it to my Visa. I've been working for them checks to take you somewhere out to eat. Got your makeup all done, got your highlight on fleek. I wanna show you to the world, baby. But tell me where you tryna go. If you tryna chill, we can stay up in my home. Watch some HBO Go. We can disconnect our phone and turn them lights down low. Down low, go ahead and tell how we know you, there's no deal. Baby girl, you thicker than a bowl of oatmeal. We've been doing this for years, I still feel it's so real. I still open up the door and I still hold your coat still. Always tell you how I feel like a moorang do. Honestly, you know, we'll always keep the tool chains true. And if you feel confused, girl, I'm talking about you. On that ghost town DJ, I'm talking my boo. Real talk like that.
Notice me, senpai. Notice me.
Nice. That's a good one. And there are a few of the ladies. So let's, this one is Paulaholic _214.
I'm so gone, you never know your rights from wrong. Could have never recognized a queen that's laying on the throne. From the time that I was alone, singing, crying all these songs, I should have knew that dog wasn't chasing me, said dog just wanted a bone. I had to learn all this the hard way. Hearing rumors after BS, don't listen to the things they say. Sure, but I should listen to the things you say. The lies can picture perfect till that demon start to fade away. You had a funny way of viewing things, cause if I pulled a U on you, you wouldn't look at me the same. And I'm sorry not to you, but to me, cause I'm trying to feel pretty, but I can't by losing sleep. It's crazy how you switched up on your word prompts. You never lie or hurt me, man, that's really for the birds. Don't worry, cause I'll forever be good. I won't keep trying to make it work. I'm not the engine that could. It's funny cause I miss you sometimes. Not really you, but that feeling I get when you told me lies. Sticks and stones can break my bones, but your ways can only harm you once you see I'm so gone.
Uh-oh.
Hey.
Hey. All right.
That was good.
That was really good.
How come I can't rap?
I know, right? Maybe we could fix that or something. I don't know.
No, I'm like, I'm sitting over here like, well, I can do my own taxes. I have some other life skills.
I low-key wanted you and me to write one because, you know, we have that, like, joke about, like, yeah, we need about 2 years and we're going to bounce. And I was like, so gone. So, anyways, we'll talk about that
later. You're going to write a Blaxit
rap. Yeah, it would be like a Blaxit anthem.
A Blaxit anthem. Yeah, that's what it would be. All right, so we got one more by Lexa Laterra, another female rapper. Here she goes.
Since I left my ex, it ain't been the same. Shoot your shot, but y'all boys can't really aim. Hopping in my DMs, asking for my name. You know good and well, Lexa is my username. I mean, really, y'all kill me. You don't have no turn, no Timmy. Mentally, y'all don't feel me. Curve game so crazy, then I hit my shimmy anyways. Thinking about my ex too much. And my feelings, I've been listening to Drake too much. I'm so into you. Fab into Mia. Late at night, dreaming of you. On my Selena. Tyrone scratching for you. Ooh, you got me fiending. Hold up, got so gone through. Up word vomit on how much you mean to me. The grass on the other side ain't what it seemed to be. Honestly, like India, I need that love. Searching for another you inside of every club. Searching for that high from you inside of every blood. Inside of every blood.
She was good too.
That's really good.
Yeah, so check that out. So Gone Challenge. Lots of people have been doing it. Oh, that was the other thing. So most importantly, Monica and Missy did their own new version, and here they go.
Ooh, bring it back. Remember that when I used to scrap, used to have to rap or slap all them chicks for talking smack. Monica will still snap, kick down those until my heels crack. Now I'm making racks while they rapping on my old track. So gone, y'all the type of chicks I keep my eyes on. Hey girl, get your own man, leave mine alone. Mrs. Brown don't make me have to bring the meat back. I snatch off your edges, make you wonder where your weeds at. Believe that, I'm the M-O-N-I-C-A. Freestyle in one take, I represent the A. Heard it was a so-gone challenge, man, I said no way. Song still bang like we in 2003. Yeah, when I walk up in the booth, the way I spit my rhyme, kick a freestyle on the top, the world lost their mind. Yeah, the world lost their mind.
All right, so Gone Challenge, check it out. It's a good one.
Very nice. That was a good little. I really wish I could rap. I really.
Me too.
You know what?
I'm sorry. So sorry. So sorry. That I was such a.
But there's always a lot of apologies. This week in apologies, it's the Mercury News. California news site apologizes for an insensitive headline about Simone Manuel. And the original headline, Olympics, and then the colon, Michael Phelps shares historic night with African American.
Oh, God.
Said African American being Simone Manuel, the first ever black person to win an individual. Black woman or black person? African-American?
Black person.
To win an individual gold in the United States. Yeah. And it was Michael Phelps shares his historic night, apparently, with just random African-American. And, of course, the backlash was quick and furious. And the Mercury News says, we apologize for an insensitive headline earlier on a story about Simone Manuel and Michael Phelps medal wins. And then their retweet was Olympics Stanford's Simone Manuel shares historic night with. And then they even went one step further. Olympics Stanford's Simone Manuel and Michael Phelps make history. So even their like apology was like, she shares it with, oh, wait a minute. Oh, okay. They both made history. Sorry, guys. Because you, as we know, Leslie, had to make your tweet declaration about various reasons why this was so important and more than just
any old thread. It's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, what I noticed was that the Mercury News Bay Area News Group laid off 11 people from the copy desk.
Yeah.
They said that this is what changed once they made these layoffs. Staff stories that go inside sections will not be copy edited. The assigning editors will be the only read. In sports, late stories that do not go through an assigning editor will continue to be read on the desk once only. Stories for our East Bay weeklies will not be copy edited. Staff stories for section covers will receive one read on the desk rather than the current two, and proofreading will be reduced. That's not going to lead to
that's
good headline.
Recipe for success.
Just saying.
With sensitivity.
Rethink that.
I mean, that just sounds lazy.
It is.
And you ain't even got the decency to be shame about it, lazy.
It almost seems like, I don't say like made up, but like one of the people said, like, oh, blame this on the artificial intelligence.
Did they actually make an apology?
So then on their website it says, the original headline on the story was insensitive and has been updated to acknowledge the historic gold medal wins by both Simone Manuel and Michael Phelps. We apologize for the original headline. The story has also been updated. So there you go. I'm going to give that
a three. I give it a three.
I was going to say a 1.5 because the words "we apologize" was there.
They said we apologize.
On our scale, there's like 7 points.
And they
points.
Did fix what they did. So that's why I give them the 3. They changed the headline and they updated the article. They said why, because they didn't acknowledge
They didn't express regret. They didn't explain what went wrong.
That's why they didn't get a 5.
Really acknowledge responsibility.
Or a 4.
Repent.
They got a 3.
I guess they offered repair
by
changing
it.
What
do you think, Zakiya? What would you
I was sitting
them?
Over here at a solid 2.
I will across the board. 1, 2, 3.
There we go. Sucks, and sucks some more.
Exactly.
Terrible.
On the apologies, you're not even in the finals.
Yeah.
You need to make the fucking semis.
Sorry.
Mercury
you're
News.
Out.
You out.
You're out, dude. You're out.
There's so many apologies. Every fucking week, it's like a bajillion different things that could go wrong. And speaking of every week, a bajillion different things.
White people, I get bullied in school. I can't wait till I'm a cop so I can bully you. White people. Hey. White people.
God damn it. Fucking white people.
I'm going to give this
God
one twice.
God damn it. Fucking white people.
Because I just saw that. What's your buddy read? So maybe a third.
God damn it. Fucking white people. Okay.
A noose display along Oklahoma highway shocks drivers. The person who put the display up, Merle Martindale, let me mention that one more time, Merle Martindale, removed the nooses shortly after the backlash started, saying that the display was not meant to be racist, but merely a deterrent for potential thieves, you guys.
Oh, get out of here.
Merle sounds like a real reasonable kind of guy.
Mm-hmm. The nooses were hung on a tree accompanied with a sign that read, "It's best not to be hanging around this area after dark."
Oh, for fuck's sake. That is that's straight up sundown town, like literally like verbatim, right? Like, don't let the sun go down. Like, literally, and he's going to say it was a deterrent to thieves. Fuck you, Merle.
Come on. That's like not, you know, if you're going to try to... See, I'm so annoyed by it, I can't even get a good sentence out. I mean, the hell are you talking about? That's not even vague.
Yeah, just
That's
own
not
your shit.
Vague. It's not thinly veiled.
Not at all.
That's
own
not
it.
Nothing. You did that to intimidate and scare people. It was not theft deterrent.
Yeah, you should just be come out like, yeah, I hate the... Just do it. We all know it. You don't need to, like, pretend now. You know, there's no saving face, dude. You hung a fucking noose.
Nope.
You hung a fucking noose.
Yeah.
Just own that shit.
It says Martindale removed the sign of his own accord because of the attention it was getting. According to the sheriff's office, officers went over to talk to the man after getting complaints, but did not ask him to take down the display because it didn't break any laws.
Sure, why would they? Sheriffs are like, oh yeah, you got the noose up again. Hey, Merle, it's causing a bit of a stir, this year, Merle. I know you like them nooses, but,
these social justice warriors.
Your noose might have gone what we like to call viral.
You know, but this wasn't Christmas lights.
No.
You know, I mean, they make it seem like it was some benign. Oh, God. That's so insulting.
Yeah, that can't be the name of the show, Viral Noose.
Yeah.
Merle.
No, we're Merle, not that's
like the worst white supremacist band name ever. Merle and the fucking...
the nooses? I don't know.
Merle and the... Merle and the viral nooses. Good fucking Christ.
It's terrible. Sounds like a disease strain.
Merle and his viral noose.
Oh my
god. Damn it, Merle. Yes. White people.
You're next, babe.
I swear to God.
Yeah.
Dominoes, eat me.
So we've been talking on the show a bunch about this potential, like, did Trump's campaign, like, have something to do with the Ukraine and Putin? And there was some language and some Republican stance on Ukraine. It involves, like, how weapons can go. And then Trump's all like, he's not going to go in Ukraine. But wait a minute, he's already in Crimea. Well, he's not going to really go again. Like, there's been a bunch of weird stuff. And it now really, really, like, straight up, like, we got receipts that there's a secret ledger in the Ukraine that has cash for Donald Trump's campaign chief. I just don't know what to do with that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, honest to God, like, straight up, like really, like, the United States election has been corrupted by undisclosed payments of cash totaling over $12 million given to Manafort, Trump's campaign manager.
Yeah.
How is this possible? Like, how is this not like the end of his campaign at this point?
I mean, he's had so many moments that should have been the end of everything. And it's like, honestly, I swear, I think on Twitter it was like, there was a question people posed, like, what would Donald Trump have to do to, you know, get, what's the worst thing Donald Trump could do and still not get, you know, his campaign just like,
you know,
people were writing things like shooting a neighbor, like literally, like he could shoot his neighbor. I think he'd still be able to keep going.
I don't know if we have it in the notes, but the movie we saw, Sausage Party.
I have it in the notes.
The most R-rated thing I've ever seen. Like, my takeaway is based on that, if you have a cartoon and it's not like an actual penis and a vagina, there's no limit. There is now no limit. And I think Trump's the same way. Just, yeah. You know, aside from like, he said he could shoot somebody on the street in Manhattan and it wouldn't be a big deal. His poll numbers would go up. That's like a quote verbatim from the candidate himself, that he could shoot somebody on the street in Manhattan and his poll numbers would go up. So I don't know what he could do. Nothing.
Yeah, I don't know either. I really don't. I don't know
That's
what he could
terrifying.
Do.
I mean, he could shoot someone like in the face and it would still be fine.
Mm-hmm.
It would still be fine with people.
It's true. And I'm just thinking, just when I think back to like Howard Dean's, whoa, like that derailed his entire campaign.
Yeah,
a fucking sound.
A soundbite.
Really? A weird, like quirky, like nerdy, you know.
Gary Hart couldn't keep
sound.
It in his pants and it was all over, right? Gary Hart got caught going to a woman's like a boat.
Yep.
Right? Like, they didn't have any evidence other than like he went on this boat and she was on this boat.
Yep.
And that was enough for his entire campaign to be like, nope, you're done. And this
done.
Fucking psycho. I know people don't like the ableist usage of things on Donald Trump, but I think we can honestly call him a psychopath. I feel like that's appropriate. Sociopath? I don't know. But, you know, it seems apt. He has a personality disorder of some sort that's just unbelievable that
yes,
he's
it's
a
bad.
Major candidate.
It's very bad.
Some may write.
Something is.
Some may
write
with
true.
Him.
I mean, and like last week, his whole like founder of ISIS is Obama. And then he's like, he went on some show where they're like, well, you didn't really mean that. He goes, yeah, I did. He's the founder of ISIS. Like, he doubled down. He's the founder of ISIS. He is absolutely just too much. Too much. Well, I hate to do it, but it happens every week, and we don't always do it, but... Yes, yes, all caps. This is a, I think it was in Twitter or Instagram or Facebook perhaps, a story that went kind of viral of an individual worked at, I think, EA Sports, California,
yeah,
man,
so.
And his 7-year-old daughter had a terrifying run-in with the Highway Patrol on Friday night to visit the Grand Canyon. But it's a long Facebook post, and I won't go through the whole thing, but he basically recounts, you know, being pulled over, getting out, you know, hands, put your hands up, and basically having his hands above his head, and the cops saying, move your fucking hands from your waist or I'll put two holes in your back right now. And him thinking like, Jesus Christ, like this is how it happens. Like they're saying something totally outlandish and like fake to basically stage the ability to kill me, right? You know, quit reaching for your fucking waist. Quit reaching for my gun. Like while your hands are like in the middle of air. And his daughter's like screaming, what's going on? She doesn't know what's going on. It turns out that he was in a rental car that the license plate had been listed as not stolen, but like, I forget what happened, but like it was in one state, like Nevada, and then he's now in Arizona. And the cop basically didn't read the report, didn't do his job, didn't like look at the second line on the report,
right,
and went into like fucking like steroid like RoboCop mode, right? Like just went super fucking like over the top. Like you think some fucking, and it's a white dude, right? Like imagine if this is a black person, right? And this cop's got, I think, like two or three other incidents against him like this, where he's gone way overboard. Just the whole fucking thing's like
extra.
You know, it's not just extra, and I like that he's telling a story, and I like that, that the guy's like, hey, I've got money and means, and I'm gonna, is that dog for real with his barking?
Barking?
If he's like, yep, I've got money and means, and I'm gonna, you know, I'm gonna sue, I'm gonna do something about this. My daughter's traumatized, and I think that's, you know, okay, great that that, you know, you can do that, but I feel it's getting to the point for some white people now, like, oh, wait a minute. These cops is just fucking crazy too. And I hope that that gets tied into supremacy more than just like cops is crazy. Cause I see a lot of that at these, like we had in Grandpa's, a meeting, and the white people wanted to talk about nothing about police violence. Cause they like that. They can wrap their head around police violence.
Right. I mean, I guess for me, it's interesting on one hand, but then on the other, it's like, you know, you could just believe black people.
Yeah, that's my, that that was kind of my point. Like, this, not the so what about it, but like, you know, it's not just like, okay, great, it's having white people too, but like, you know, A, you could believe black people, and B, like, this isn't just because cops are fucking cops.
No, like, because it's just like, and I don't, actually don't even want to get into Milwaukee and everything that's going on there, because I don't have the bandwidth right now to even discuss it. But I'll say this, that, you know, we've seen uprisings, Baltimore, Ferguson, we've seen Department of Justice come in and do actual assessments of these areas. And we've seen report after report showing how blatantly racist these police departments are. So it's like, and nothing changes. That's the really like disturbing part of it, because they have no effect on any cases that are pending against police officers. They're always able to somehow say like, yes, here's all of these structurally racist things that we have put together, but these individual cases, they ain't racist.
Right. They don't have anything to do with
this. Is what they say.
Mountain of data over here.
Like the
these individual ones that actually killed black people, they're the ones that aren't racist. Okay.
All 146 shots into the car weren't racist. Okay, got it.
They shot the dude in the back. The back. What are you talking about?
It's a total insult. It's just total insult.
Well, and I'm not.
So I don't have these fucking conversations with people no more, because I just feel like if you think there's a conversation to be had, I don't need to be around you. Like there's no conversation here,
right? And I, you know, not that I'm saying I'm having a conversation, but
no,
from a like the state's standpoint, I'm not saying I get it, but like to indict any one of these individual cases is to indict the entire system.
Yeah.
So they kind of have to throw their whole might behind it in a really fucking, like, I've called it this paint yourself into a corner, like, bizarre fucking defensive shit. Like, the state and whitenesses, like, whiteness society's collective defense of the, like, ongoing genocide of black people at the hands of the state, in particular at the hands of police extrajudicially, is, it's increasingly bizarre. Like, it really was, like, hard to explain, like, a bunch of shit 20 years ago, and now it's increasingly, like, come on. Like, you just, how are you going to fucking explain that? And then, like, 6 weeks later, you're like, I can't believe they did that. I can't believe, you know, like, I guess the van killed Freddie Gray. I don't know. I'm not sure, because nobody's guilty.
Now that you're talking about that, now that you mention it, okay, we haven't talked about the Department of Justice report from Baltimore, but let's get into it a little bit, because I really, the Ferguson report was bad, because I feel like with Ferguson, you saw the economic and systemic pressures that were being put on these on the community there, with, you know, warrants and fines and all of these right. things that were being levied against a community, like literally keeping them as poor as possible. But the actual enforcement of police duties in Baltimore, honest to goodness, here's just a few things. In 2014, a middle-aged African-American man alleged that a sergeant in Southeast Baltimore stopped him near Patterson Park and strip searched him in public. When the man protested and said he would contact a lawyer, the sergeant allegedly told him, "Get your nigger ass out of here." Baltimore Police Department found the complaint not sustained without interviewing any of the involved parties.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. This didn't happen. We're not going to ask nobody, nope. But we know it didn't. Mm-hmm.
The N-word 60 more times. In the approximately 6 years of complaint data we received from BPD, we found only one complaint that BPD classified as a racial slur. This is implausible. By manually reviewing and performing text searches on BPD's complaint data, we found 60 more complaints that alleged the BPD used just one racial slur, the N-word, but all these complaints were misclassified as a lesser offense.
What in the entire... There was, from the report, I don't know if you've got these same highlights, they targeted black individuals for pulling over was unreal. And one individual got pulled over so many times. It was unfathomable. This individual got in a 60-month period, in 5 years, got pulled over like 40 or 50 times. I'm not even kidding. Got pulled over more times in like 3 years than I'll get pulled over my entire life.
Pushing around black grandmas. The city paid $95,000 in 2012 to settle a lawsuit brought by an 87-year-old African-American grandmother who alleged that she was shoved against the wall after she refused to allow an officer to enter her basement to conduct a warrantless search. After shoving the woman to the floor, the officer allegedly stood over her and said, "Bitch, you ain't no better than any of them other old black bitches I have locked up."
Wow.
Police.
There was the one where they were in the car, the investigators, the DOJ's in the car, and the guy says, "Go pull over and you know, put a charge on those black folk over there." And the one officer says, but charge them with what?" And the supervisor says, "I don't know, make something up." And the fucking DOJ's in the car.
Yeah.
They're like, it wasn't just blatant, it was like they didn't care.
An inherently racist arrest template. A shift commander of one of BPD's districts emailed a template for describing trespassing arrests to a sergeant and patrol officer. The template provided a blueprint for arresting an individual standing on or near a public housing development who cannot give, quote, a valid reason for being there. A facially unconstitutional detention. Equally troubling is the fact that this template contains blanks to be filled in for details of the arrest, including the arrest data and location and the suspect's name and address, but does not include a prompt to fill in race or gender of the arrestee. Rather, the words black male are automatically included in the description of the arrest.
So the template.
Oh, God.
The fucking template.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
The template. It not even, like, let's just start with the black, then also the male. They're just black male.
Mm-hmm.
Pre-filled.
Yeah. In 2013, a white male BPD officer made a racially charged threat to an African-American teenager while booking the youth into Baltimore's juvenile facility on a failure to appear charge. Again, a failure to appear charge. The incident stemmed from an argument about George Zimmerman, who had been acquitted of murdering Trayvon Martin 4 days earlier. In response to the teenager referring to the officer's president as Zimmerman's, a white officer threatened the juvenile by referring to the outfit Marin wore at a Martin wore at the time he was killed. Quote, put on a hoodie and come to my neighborhood. You will see, end quote. The officer also threatened youth by stating, quote, if you come to my neighborhood, I'll throw you in the water and feed you to the crabs. I'll then let the crabs get fat off you and then sell them to your family, end quote.
Oh my.
When BPD investigated the incident, the officer admitted to talking about the crabs and throwing them in the river, but claimed to internal affairs investigators that he could not recall whether he made the remark about the hoodie. BPD sustained a complaint against the officer for misconduct and making inappropriate comment, but the investigative file contains no record of discipline. The officer remains employed at Baltimore Police Department.
Of course he fucking does.
Of course he does.
Of course. You know, it's been 2 years. We've been doing podcasts. In the very beginning, we talked about a black woman in Texas that got fired for a fucking tweet. Literally a fucking tweet. And like the tweet, she's getting trolled and responded to somebody like, you know, sarcastically, you know, kill yourself, and got fired for that. And then this fucking dude, no problem. And not only no problem, he's always right. He's able to make up and do whatever he wants with impunity. And he carries a gun. And his job is to fucking police and make money off of black bodies. Mm-hmm. And we're paying his salary. What the entire fuck?
Mm-hmm. But, you know, we shouldn't be suspicious.
Yeah. I'm only going to read two more. Number one of these is lock up all the black hoodies. A sergeant told us that in 2011, her lieutenant, a commander in charge of setting enforcement priorities for an entire police district during the shift, ordered the sergeant to instruct officers under her command to, quote, lock up all the black hoodies, end quote, in her district. When the sergeant objected and refused to follow the order, she received an unsatisfactory performance evaluation and was transferred to a different unit. The sergeant filed a successful complaint about her performance evaluation with the BPD's Equal Opportunity and Diversity section, but BPD never took action against the lieutenant for giving the order to target black hoodies for enforcement. And the last one. One Baltimore firefighter and an emergency medical technician told us that prior to a march led by a prominent African-American pastor in 2015, a BPD officer told the firefighters, they're going marching and there's going to be a problem. What y'all should do is turn the hoses on them.
End in quote. 2015.
Last year.
I can't turn the fucking hoses on.
Yeah. But nobody killed Freddie Gray in that environment. In that department. Environment.
No one was guilty.
Nobody's guilty.
Zero people were fucking guilty. You know, I'm not talking about, you know, internalized depression or anyone that's a cop or this, that, but people just throw all the time, like, but, you know, the three of the people were black that, you know, were charged with killing Freddie Gray.
Of course.
And I think in an environment that you've described, it's so systemic.
It's systemic. It's beyond systemic. It's how they're trained. It's what they're told to do. It's what they're built to do.
Exactly. When people say the system's broken, it's like, it's working just like it's meant to.
It's working exactly the way it's intended to work.
It's chewing up black folk just like it's meant.
Mm-mm-mm. We definitely, for sure, need a palate cleanser after all that.
Yeah, that was fucking... Yeah.
But yes, fuck the Baltimore Police Department. Last story.
That bass line go forever, dude.
Yeah, so good.
Too good.
So POTUS gifted us with his 2016 summer playlist, both daytime and nighttime.
This was fun.
For good measure. And he, his daytime one's pretty good. He's got Wally on there, Leon Bridges, Sarah Bareilles, Janelle Monae, Jadena, Jay-Z featuring Pharrell, Commons on here, Aloe Black. It's very varied. Nas and Damian Jr. Gong Marley. Nina Simone's on there with Centerman. Aretha Franklin, some Beach Boys, Gary Clark Jr. I mean, it's pretty tight, I have to say.
It's a good playlist.
Good daytime playlist. But this nighttime playlist, listen. I'm actually going to read from Very Smart Brothers because Damon Young just took this right away. The title of this is The POTUS Nighttime Playlist Proves President Obama Saved All of His Remaining Fucks for the Bedroom. Remember this time last year when President Obama said something about folks wanting to pop off, and I wrote that he'd entered the fuck challenge stage of his term in office, and he kept doing things to reinforce this idea, convincing us that he left his last fuck in El Segundo? Well, it looks like I was slightly wrong. President Obama isn't completely fuck poor. He's apparently still possesses quite a few fucks, but as a nighttime version of this summer's POTUS playlist proves, he's redirected all of those to the bedroom. Seriously, look at some of these songs on here. Do you feel me, lady? Say motherfucking yes. I get lonely. I bet if you collected every I'm Totally Getting Some Cheeks Tonight mixtape within the last 25 years, at least one of these songs would be on 97% of them. Karim Bailey Ray, whose music makes me want to plant flowers and shit just so I can fuck on them, is on this damn album. Fiona fucking Apple, whose voice makes me want to clutch pearls that ain't even on my neck, is on this damn album. Ladisi, Billy, Miles, Meth. No wonder Malia's taking break years and smoking weed at festivals and twerking, and Sasha's working at Red Lobster. They're just doing whatever the hell they can to get out of the house because they're tired of their parents vibrating the walls and then walking around all awkwardly and embarrassingly afterwards, asking the girls if they want some eggs and shit. Damn, I'm gonna miss them.
In like a smoking robe and shit.
Yes.
Get your girl some eggs.
with a fucking Newport dangling off his bottom.
For legit. Real, he smokes one a day, I think. So maybe he stopped.
I don't know if he still does. But yes, it is
when he's coming in off the balcony.
Yes. For real, your mama ain't gonna be walking right for a couple of days. You want some pancakes?
Let your mom sleep. I'm making breakfast. Let your mom sleep.
She needs her rest.
And I have to say, when I looked at the nighttime playlist and saw that it had Fiona Apple's Criminal on it, that took me back.
I was like, okay, Mary.
I mean, I was in undergrad when that song was out. Mm. And, you know, I was in a dance department. So it was all about dressing in black and being full of angst.
Oh, yes.
It was like that, you know, that song was, yeah, memories of being, you know, young and angsty and doing all types of shit I shouldn't have been doing.
Mm-hmm. Even he dropped it. The tweet says, been waiting to drop this. Summer playlist, the encore. What's everybody listening to? Like, seriously? This is our president. Man, we are really going to miss them. I really, like, it's going to be, I might cry. I don't think I've ever been upset.
Well, here's what bothers me. Okay, so you know we have this ritual in this country where the new person gets elected and sworn in, then there's the procession down Pennsylvania Avenue, and they get to the White House, and the outgoing president greets them and brings them in, and there's like a behind closed door, you know, meeting thing, and they exchange gifts.
Yes.
The Obamas are very classy people. Can you imagine them having to give gifts to that fool?
To him? Nah.
And his raggedy wife. I mean, what do you give?
I hope they troll the shit out of him. I hope they troll the shit out of me. Like, this is the most outlandish and, like, ridiculous, like, horrible, gilded fucking, like, piece of crap we could find.
Oh, my God. I mean, just to have to welcome them and do the huggy, huggy, kissy, kissy.
Ew.
And sit and fucking do the tea and crumpets. They're very classy people, but
I don't think they're going to be able to do that.
I'd have to skip town. I really would be like, I know this is the protocol, but no.
Like, nah.
We're going to be on vacation January 20th. See, I saved my days up from the last 4 years, and I'm going to take this day.
Mm. Yes, deuces. Exactly. I'm out. Yeah, so that was good. Good on you, POTUS, for your playlist. We'll make a link to people to check it out and take a look at it. But it was very good. At per usual. Mm. So we have a new segment.
I say you have a new segment.
Well, I say we have a new segment. We haven't picked a good song for it just yet, but wait a minute.
I thought you had a candidate.
I have a candidate. I don't know if it's the winner. Okay. At all. So let's see.
Hold up. What's the name of the segment?
The segment is called Hidden History.
Okay. Hit us with your Your theme music option number one.
All right, here we go.
Bass.
Life.
Vision, dreams of passion
running through my mind.
Then all the while I think of you.
Life.
A very strange reaction. The more I see, the more I do.
Something like a phenomenon.
Baby,
hey. Tell nobody to come along. But white lies blow away.
White lies.
Yeah, white lies blow away.
All right, I'm here for you.
So we'll see. We'll see if that
white lies.
For those who did not see, this week we got to see our first sneak peek at Hidden Figures, which is a upcoming movie that tells the story of black female mathematicians who helped make NASA what it is today. It actually aired during the Olympics. Twitter went crazy. It's so, so good. It's actually the unbelievable true story of three of these women known as human computers. We follow these women as they quickly rose the ranks of NASA alongside many of history's greatest minds, specifically tasked with calculating the momentous launch of astronaut John Glenn into orbit and guaranteeing his safe return. Dorothy Vaughn, Mary Jackson, and Katherine Johnson. Let me just tell you, those might be the three oldest blackest lady names I've ever heard in my life.
Right.
I'm going to say them again.
Right.
Dorothy Vaughn, Mary Jackson, and Katherine Johnson crossed all gender, race, and professional lines with their brilliance and firmly cemented them into a U.S. history as true American heroes. The film is based on a nonfiction book by Margot Lee Shetterly. Shetterly, whose dad worked for NASA, founded the Human Computer Project, an organization whose mission is to archive the work of all the women who worked as computers and mathematicians in the early days of the National Advisory Committee of Aeronautics, which was the predecessor to NASA. And she sold her rights to the book in 2014, and that's the rest of the story. So here are the three women. Dorothy Johnson Vaughn, who is played by Octavia Spencer in the movie, was an African-American mathematician who worked for the aeronautics National Advisory before NASA became NASA. And before getting there, she worked as a mathematics teacher at R.R. Morton High School in Farmville, Virginia. In 1949, she became head of the West Area Computers, a work group comprised entirely of African-American female mathematicians. Mathematician Katherine Johnson was assigned to Vaughn's group before being transferred to Langley's Flight Research Division. And she continued on at Langley after NASA came into being, specializing for the rest of her career in electronic computing and Fortran programming. She worked in the Langley Research Center's Analysis and Computation Division and also participated in Scout Project tests at Wallops Flight Facility. She retired from NASA in 1971 and she passed away in 2008. Next, we have Mary Jackson, who's played by Janelle Monáe, and she got her bachelor's degree in mathematics and physical science from Hampton Institute in 1942, and she spent 20 years as a Girl Scout leader. She was noted for helping black children in her community to create a miniature wind tunnel. Y'all, these chicks are fucking magic. Are you kidding me? Like, that sentence is crazy. She was noted for helping black children in her community to create a miniature wind tunnel. Mm-mm-mm.
Wow.
After Hampton, she began her career there as a research mathematician or computer at the Langley Research Center. After 5 years at NASA and after taking several additional courses, she joined a special training program and was promoted to aerospace engineer. She then worked to analyze data from wind tunnel experiments and real-world aircraft flight experiments at the Theoretical Aerodynamics Branch of the Subsonic Transonic Aerodynamics Division at Langley. Her goal was to understand airflow, including thrust and drag. Many years later, she was assigned to work with the flight engineers at NASA. After 34 years at NASA, she reached the highest level of engineer that was possible for her without becoming a supervisor. She decided to take a pay cut and change positions to become an administrator in the equal opportunity specialist field and retired in 1985. She worked to help women and other minorities to advance their career, including advising them how to study so that they could change their titles from mathematician to engineer to increase their chances for promotion. And finally, we have Katherine Johnson, who is played by Taraji P. Henson. She was born in 1918. She was so gifted. She enrolled in high school at age 10. At age 14, she entered West Virginia State College, and by 18, she was a college graduate. After World War II, NACA started recruiting African Americans, and Johnson was hired in 1953 as a temp with an all-male flight research team, but quickly became a permanent important part of the team. In 1961, Alan Shepard became the first American to be in space, but a huge hat tip to Johnson, who calculated the trajectory of his trip. Johnson looked at the problem as a parabola and worked on the geometry backwards to get it right. The next year, John Glenn personally requested that Johnson recheck the calculations that a computer originally did. In 2015, President Barack Obama gave the nation's highest civilian honor to Johnson. And in 2016, NASA named a building after her called the Katherine C. Johnson Computational Research Facility, and it's at the Langley Research Center in Hampton, Virginia. Ironically, it's the same building where she was originally considered too black and too female to work in, was named in her honor.
Jeez. I mean, listen. Listen.
She's still alive. She's 97 years old. And she's going to get to see this movie come out.
And so much of her story is just, it bucks all the fucking ridiculous narrative that white and whiteness have about black folk. You know, born in 1918. Just, I love it. I fucking just love everything about. And was there something, did I see something about their story being in somewhat malign, not malign, but like people trying to talk to them about women rather than just black women with some of the promotion?
Oh, I don't know nothing about none of that, but trust, I'm sure it'll come up.
Oh, I'm sure it'll come up. I'm sure people will want to use it as a feel-good story erased from any conversation about race. I'm sure they will.
They've been doing that shit with the Olympics.
Right.
Why do you have to divide us? Y'all wasn't trying to claim us before. All of a sudden now we start winning. It's like we're all the same.
Yeah, I had to pull myself back today from somebody who was trying to do the Gabby is all of our daughters and blah, blah, blah. You know what? I can't with you. With this movie, though, I need to find some little black girls, have some boys, too, to take to go see it.
That's a good idea.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, that's actually a really good idea. Maybe that gives me, let me write that down.
Yeah, you know, don't you, I mean, because it sounds like the type of thing that I wouldn't want to see, you know, just by myself. I would want to see it with some young people and talk about it. And
yeah, that's a good idea. I'm gonna do some stuff with that.
The young woman, I don't want to say the name, that's a friend of ours that has a cousin here, and then the younger child that wants to be in math, yes. I think. She's
or
here local.
Programming, yeah.
Would be terrific to take.
Yeah. I think anybody would, really. I think there's a lot of options there, but it would be good to kind of coordinate some stuff, and we could talk about the real women beforehand and stuff like that. Would be really cool. So now's the time where we usually talk about TV, movies, books, blah, blah, blah. What are you listening to, watching, hearing, reading, all of that stuff? Doctor, I mean.
Let's see. Well, I'm on leave this semester, so I'm not reading like my standard academies. I am really into Malcolm Gladwell's podcast, Revisionist History. And I have, you know, I've had my issues with Gladwell before around, you know, some of the ways in which I feel like he capes for whiteness, but I'm always on the hunt for a good podcast. And I like the show because the episodes are kind of short and always really well done. He did like I can't remember if it was a 2 or 3 part series around funding and higher education. And that one was like excellent. He also did a wonderful episode on how the notion of genius or how the evidence of genius emerges in people. And it was so good. I can't wait to like figure out how to work it into a syllabus going forward.
Have you seen Hero Dreams of Sushi?
No.
It's a documentary.
It's on Netflix, I think.
It's a documentary. It's probably on Netflix. But so you were talking about like different, you know, what was it? Gladwell talks about, you know, discovering and genius and so forth. But so there's a theory of different levels of mastery. And it's sort of similar to that level 1, 2, 3 understanding I try to describe for like white people unconditioning our thinking about race. But so here, I am understanding, because I haven't seen the documentary fully. A friend of mine is telling me this. Has a level 4 of a mastery where you know so much about an area. You have so much expertise that you're able to spuriously almost surprise yourself on occasion. And, you know, like you're just like, you're so good at something. You're like, oh, man, look, I just put these things together. I didn't know I could put these thoughts, ideas, and something new and novel has come from that.
Well, it's interesting because Gladwell talks about this notion that there are some people whose genius emerges almost immediately. They create something and it has sort of an immediate impact, whereas other people are much more iterative in their process. You know, it takes them a long time to create something that truly expresses, you know, what they wanted to express. And that is so important with college students who believe that. Especially, you know, because I deal with students in dance departments and, you know, students who are working on choreography and even just with writing, students who don't want to do the process of revision, students who think that the first version is always the best version of the thing, and really getting them to kind of deconstruct that. So I'm excited about figuring out how I can weave that into something in the future. I am listening to the song Good as Hell by Lizzo on repeat. That's my like theme song for the summer.
Okay.
So, and I didn't know about Lizzo until I listened to an episode of So Many White Guys.
Okay.
Which is like my other podcast obsession right now. Evidently this song was on the new Barbershop movie soundtrack.
Oh.
I didn't see the movie, so I didn't know about it, but the song is like amazing, empowering. She's gorgeous, you know, shout out to fantastic plus size black girls everywhere. And oh, I am binge watching past seasons of Bring It on Sling TV right now.
That's funny. We know
Lifetime app.
We know one of the producers of that show. Actually, I don't think she's producing anymore, but whatever you're watching, she would have produced.
Yeah.
I need to understand that it is easily one of my favorite. I am in love with Miss Diana.
She's the best.
In love with those girls.
Fucking.
Because, see, it's not just dance. That show is black girl training.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
the moms on that show are the best.
Or when Diana will look at them and say, of course you go be challenged. You stand there and you face it. You know, you don't back down. You move through that. Trophies don't matter.
You all are excellent.
I be sitting here eating my snacks like, yes.
Yes, Diana, yes.
I too can be excellent.
We're watching, this you have on the list, Lizzie, but Jeff Lewis flipping out.
I love flipping out. That show is so good.
He's so neurotic. The neurotic guy.
Yeah.
The Jenny. OCD.
Yeah. He's so neurotic, but they're having a baby, so it's kind of getting crazy up in there.
I can't imagine him being around his own baby because he doesn't like
mess. I don't know either. It's going to definitely be an interesting situation for him and poor Gage.
Yeah, I feel bad for Gage sometimes.
Yeah, I often feel bad for Gage, actually. It's a pretty common occurrence, feeling bad for him.
All right, so let's do it. Let's talk about the hot, controversial mess that is Sausage Party,
Sausage
I guess.
Sausage Party. So, yeah.
I'm so glad y'all saw it, because I was scared.
It was...
I'll tell you, we went in pretty cold. I had generally good reviews from a couple of people that I trust. Shout out to Chris Fett from movietrailerreviews.net. And, you know, just saying that it was vulgar but funny. And I said, you know, let's check it out. I actually didn't even know what it was about.
I had no information. The only thing I knew was Joe Gordon-Levitt. Someone had tweeted him like, hey, Sausage Party's coming out. It's a cartoon. Is it a lot like Life of Pets? Or, you know, what's different than Life of Pets? Right? That was the question. He quote tweeted it like, a lot, right? That's all he said. Like, a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So we go to see it, and it's
probably the filthiest movie I've seen in like 10 years.
So
easily.
Tiki, have you seen South Park's Bigger, Longer, Uncut? Their movie,
When
that came out, and I remember that being like, holy cow, I can't believe like just how filthy that movie was. Right? The producers trained. Trey Parker and Matt Stone said that what they would do is every time the standards division would like send it back and be like, you can't do that, they'd make it filthier. They'd make it literally filthier and keep sending it back again and again and again and again and again until finally the standards are like, okay, fine, whatever. And like at one point they realized that the Bigger, Longer, Uncut was a dick joke and like, oh, wait a minute, we can't, you know, we don't want that. Well, too bad, you already approved it, right? Like that's they played a game with like the standards department. So I don't know what these guys did with standards, but again, it seems to the apparent modus operandi is cartoon, as long as it's not like penis and vagina, all bets off. There is nothing else. Because they did, you can't name a thing that they did or you could do that they didn't do. Just name a word, name a thing, name a topic, name a taboo, name a almost anything. So I did think that the movie on some level was funny. It had lots that made me laugh, and I laughed out loud.
Yeah, like, yeah, I really absolutely did laugh out loud.
And it definitely was crude. It was on the sophomoric, you know, like lowest common denominator. And I thought there was, on some level, on the bigger, sort of like the MacGuffin side, I thought they did a pretty decent job with, like, you know, LGBT and, you know, a couple other different intersections. But like everything these days, did a real, like, ole when it came to race. You know, I was like, yeah.
Well, I knew something was wrong when I saw a little trailer and the non-perishables showed up, kind of speaking in a way that sounded like a black kind of vernacular thing. And I was already like, I don't know how I feel about this.
So now that's the controversial and probably the problematic part. Yes. Every single product in the movie was portrayed in a racialized stereotype trope-like way, right? So every single product, right?
So like there was a drunk tequila bottle.
Stop.
There was a lesbian taco played by Salma Hayek.
No.
And the non-perishables you saw was, I thought, the worst. In some instances, and I'm not saying this makes it right, but in some instances, the marginalized community that's being, let's say, skewered by this characterization, the actor doing the voiceover was a member of that marginalized community. Again, I'm not saying that it makes it acceptable, but in some instances, they did that. The one that you saw, the non-perishable, was a character named Firewater that was a Native American stereotype played by Bill Hader. So that one rubbed me a little bit more than the other.
They all rubbed
me all wrong, but that one in particular was like,
ugh. It was all the same people from, what's that word? This Is the End or whatever. All of these like Seth Rogen movies. So what was Craig Robinson?
Craig Robinson playing a box of grits.
A box of grits. And he's pissed off at the crackers
for invading. Of course he is. But like at one point, you know, I'm not trying to like spoil shit, but like, you know, literally takes, because he's a character that's a box of grits and he's mad at these crackers and he's talking about these crackers, and at one point like has a box of crackers and is like fucking the shit out of the crackers.
Like, fuck you, you fucking cracker, take my fucking cracker.
Like, it's way over the top.
In fact, the entire coda of the movie is one long, like, inappropriate food
orgy
based and like inappropriately racially coded sex scene, like orgy. That's what the entire code of the movie is.
Oh no! There's a
Jewish bagel that fucks lavash bread, like the, you know, and they both they find their love over falafel. They both like falafel. Like, this is the kind of shit that's in the movie.
Who is this movie for, y'all?
White boys,
dude bros.
Yeah, dude
I'm
bros.
Figuring. Stoners.
Okay.
There's a stoner.
It wasn't, like I said, it wasn't like, okay, this is horrible, awful, this is the worst thing ever. But I feel like had they not done the ole on race, like, it's weird. Like, there's this, right now Apple's got this commercial with Maya Angelou and like all this stuff that's like all great about equality and goodness and all this stuff. But it's like, is it about race? Like, kind of not really. Like, it's weird. It's like, it's kind of about justice, but like, not about race. Like, it's trying to make it palatable for white folk. And I feel like that's what this did too. Like, it took the LGBT arc real. Like, it was clear. It was real. They took no, you know, they didn't equivocate when it came to sexuality and the gender binary and LGBTness. But when it came to race, it was like, oh, and these old sort of, you know, we got to stop doing these old tribalist things. Stop it, guys. And that, like, literally was kind of like the summation of race. It was like,
pretty much. I mean, it sounds like a joke that started like in the university cafeteria or like at a frat house or something.
Right. And the crux of the movie actually didn't have any of that in it. It was about a hot dog that really wanted to have sex with his bun girlfriend, and they've been locked in their bags, and because there's a larger plot about, I won't ruin it, but there's a larger plot about what happens to the food once it leaves the
you're right,
like the main plot didn't have anything to do with race, so it was
weird. Be who you are, it was be yourself,
and it was just weird that they had it, they like decided that that was where the jokes needed to come from. It just was unnecessary and useless.
Like there's a and this is again not a spoiler, it's the very beginning of the movie, like the first 2 seconds, they have this song that all the various products in this grocery store sing. And the song gives you all the racial dog whistles that you're going to now have the rest of the movie. And like, there's a sauerkraut of some sort or something that's German, and it's got like a Hitler little mustache. And their part of the song is talking about exterminating the juice. G-U-I-C-E, right? Juice.
Stop it.
I'm not. I wish I was making shit up.
Man.
But it's like I said to Leslie, it felt like, and I don't really know how to describe it, and I'm not necessarily here for it anymore, is this, it's okay because we made fun of everybody, right? Like South Park did that a lot with like, well, but we made fun of Jews, but we made fun of Christians too, and we made fun of Scientologists, we made fun of everybody, but like, you know, it's okay that we continue to make these, you know, homosexual and, you know, potty jokes and little boy, you know, adolescent humor jokes, because we do it to everybody. It's everybody.
And I hate that kind of logic, because it makes it seem like everybody is standing on the playing field at the same place.
Yeah, right. White men aren't there. You never make fun of white men. You know, I guess the crackers were kind of there, but like the crackers, like you, if you were going to say that, like, well, white, you know, we got white people with the crackers and the cracker, like, yeah, not really, you know, not really. There's a difference between a drunk tequila bottle and a fucking, like, you know, lesbian taco and a fucking cracker box.
Yeah.
Like, there just really is.
That's not, we're not all on the field at the same starting point with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it really bothers me. Well, you know, I'm equal. I've been around, you know, white folks who will do the whole, well, you know, don't be offended. I'm equal opportunity with like my racist jokes and blah, blah, blah. It's like, no.
No, you're not.
Why is that an excuse? I'm equal opportunity with my racism. Like, no, hipster, that's not a fucking, okay, well, you suck equally. Like, you're an asshole across the board. Congratulations.
With your fucking man bun and your craft beer. Like, get away from me.
Man, buddy, your craft beer. I wear a kilt. I'm international.
Oh, see.
That's my multi-culti.
My girlfriend's transracially adopted. Come on, man.
No. I mean, it just sounds like,
how can I be racist?
It sounds like a private joke between friends that they said, we could really get some mileage out of this.
I mean, all their shit's like that. Every one of their movies is like, they got high and they started talking about it, like, let's make it into a movie. And then like 17 months later, like, holy fuck, I can't believe somebody paid us to make this into a movie.
Exactly.
Like, it's like for
and
real.
And I'm embarrassed because there is a part of me for about 10 seconds. Again, I have and I'm just going to admit this. There was a part of me for like 10 seconds that had like an inexplicable crush on Seth Rogen.
I can see that.
I had like a thing. I like dudes that are kind of wide. You know what I'm saying? I like dudes that
go on, kind of funny.
You know, I like them kind of wide and kind of fun. You know, in case anybody's listening to the podcast, Dr. Amin is single now. So tweet her if you're kind of wide. But this is really, this what you're describing to me sounds patently offensive.
Mm-hmm. It was weird, and so it didn't need to be. That was really what I took away from it. It could have been a very funny movie just on the jokes that were just funny.
Sorry, I thought Tequila was going to keep talking about what she likes.
Oh, what? You go on. Is your Dirty Mac and music, Drew?
I'm just, you know, what else you like? Tell me.
What can I say? Doctor, I like them wide and funny. You know, I like them wide and funny and able to read.
Ooh,
yes. If you have good taste in podcasts and you like deep fried food, yes.
Yeah.
Don't have a problem joining me at my liberal, predominantly white church.
Oh man, you are in my wheelhouse.
Right?
Dang. Just fucking. Me and Leslie Mack, we a thing.
Yes. Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah,
it's all right.
It's serious. We're going on 15 years now.
Yeah, something like that. Well,
amazing. Y'all are just, following my foolishness. I love it.
We love it. We really.
Like I said, this is the hour. This for a week. You got it. This is the golden hour. Like the sunset. Like you get that hour every day. This is it for the week. Like you got me. You got her. You got us. It's like. We clicking. It's good.
So, Takiya, please tell everyone where they can find you on the interwebs. We'll have all the links on the website, but just so they hear it as well, where they can follow you and all that.
You can follow me on the Twitters. That's probably the easiest thing to do, at Takiya N. Amin, T-A-K-I-Y-A-H, N as in newspaper, A-M-I-N.
Excellent.
Please clap. Yes, please clap.
Yes.
The doctor's in the house.
And thank you for coming on the show.
And now that we kind of went there, I'm like, and if you know somebody who's kind of wide with a good sense of humor.
So you're not in Buffalo anymore. Where are you now?
I live in Charlotte. Okay. I live in Charlotte.
North Carolinians. Okay. Ouch, y'all. We might have to
And if you're listening and you're thinking of stepping, we already know a couple of things. I'll remind you. Do not use AAVE.
Yep.
She ain't here for that.
Please don't.
What was the? There's a couple other tips. You gave some clues.
Humor. Listen, you need to be. It's true. You need to be kind of wide, mm-hmm. and you need to be funny. Mm-hmm. If you have good, a good kind of haberdashery thing going. Good hat game.
Okay. That's right. Hats.
Some sweater vests. You know, I'm into that. I'm a professor.
Listen.
I like that kind of black dandy professor chic.
Got it.
We didn't do it. So you came in at the end of it. So we do like a little if you've ever seen the John, here's how you join the John and leave us feedback and blah, blah, blah. And we talk a little bit before we bring our guests on and bore them and shit. But we were at a friend's house that was super wealthy, and I talked about it before, but we went shopping. At one point. And I love him. He's I love him. He's such a good friend and they're great, but they just live in a different world. Like when I say super wealthy, and again, I'm not trying to be disrespectful, but just to put a figure, we're talking seven figures, this is the 1%. This is they run in a circle that just, I don't get, I don't understand. And they don't mean to be mean about it. They'll just oh, hey, can I have a recommendation for a whatever? And they'll give you something that's holy fucking Christ, I can't believe you'd ever spend that much money on that thing. I'm sorry I asked you. not in a bad way.
You tried that a few times. I was you didn't know you can't ask them for a recommendation about things?
But we went shopping. We really went straight up shopping. And we're in this store
just the boys.
Yeah, me and my man.
We were making macaroons.
And I guess it was
oh, how precious.
Yeah. It was discount at, it was a summer sidewalk sale at this, ridiculously fancy store that I didn't even know. How'd you get here? You drove this is weird. What side of town are we on? Okay, whatever. We roll up into this thing and out come fucking margaritas and cocktails and shit. I'm not even kidding. I walk up into the store and here's a vodka martini. Really? Shit, this is pretty golden. All right, whatever. And they all knew him by name and they're talking about this, and they got these dressing rooms that are bigger than my fucking bedroom. Literally the dressing room's bigger than my bedroom. And I'm like, this is crazy. I'm not even going to bother. But I'll poke around. Looked at this. Look at that. Oh, that sweater's kind of cool. Look at this. I like a nice little, sweater number. $795. For a sweater.
See, I don't even know what that means.
One sweater. I need to die.
I live in a world where you have an $800. That's not my life.
I don't want it to be my life. That's literally more than that's a mortgage payment. That's double the car payment. I couldn't believe it.
I do have moments in my life where when I'm particularly feeling despair, where I think to myself, maybe I shouldn't have gotten a PhD. I should have just took the money and got some good surgery and bought some hair and became a basketball wife. Just fancy clothes and drinks and good shoes. And I was telling my mother about this. I call it chicken head envy. Sometimes my chicken head envy kind of creeps in. And she was like, but you wouldn't be happy. I'm like, but I wouldn't have enough money to know.
Yeah.
I could fill the unhappiness with $795 sweaters.
There's definitely a, like, I forget what the word is for these two different mathematical, like, graphs. But there's one that's, like, your level of, like, you know, chickenheadness comes with, like, being kind of, like, I don't say like ignorant, but just kind of like uninformed. Like you're just like blithely like, oh, okay. Like through life. Right. Like, so there's a level of that and a level of like wealth. And like when the two cross, like, I don't know where that sweet spot is, but that's what you're looking for. You're looking for the, like, I don't need to be really, really chicken headed, but I don't need to be really wealthy, but there's somewhere in the middle, somewhere where I'm just, you know, right.
Yeah.
Like a Venn diagram.
Yeah.
Overlap.
Cause I, for me, it's like, in my life, like, I wouldn't say chicken, I'd be like, I don't want to be like douchey white guy. And like, I was like, there was a commercial real estate job that somebody handed me, like a $40,000 a year job, and they fucking paid me money. I sold a building for millions of dollars, made commissions. And I remember I told Leslie, I said, I'm miserable. I know, I see what it takes to succeed. I've never told the story. This should be like one of our, like, Drew's jobs. I'll go into more detail about this job. But the individual that I'm working for, he's like my mentor. I'm working underneath him. We go to see a guy that he's like, oh, I want to go see this person. He has a client that might be interested in, like, this, you know, this facility, this waste management facility. Goes to this guy. He's like, oh, you know, is client ABC interested in the waste management facility? We just got it. He's like, no, you know, we're building them, you know, their own thing. And we broke ground. Like, you know, in real estate parlance, like, nope, we got a development deal. We're building it. And we dug a hole in the ground. Like, it's fucking done. Right? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, the client's building their own thing with a hole in the ground. And this dude I'm working for keeps pushing and pushing and pushing. You got to get him to see the waste manager. You got to get another. Well, if you say, I know the waste manager, waste manager, waste manager. Finally, this guy from behind, like, a big fucking, like, $1,000 oak desk, you know, and like a reclined, like, Herman Miller, like, $2,000 chair, wags his finger and, like, shut the fuck up about the fucking waste manager. You say fucking waste management one more fucking time, I swear to fucking God. Okay, so anyway, how are the wife and kids? You gonna come over for cookies on Tuesday? And I literally was like, I turned around, like, looked behind me, like, is there a camera? Is this hidden? Like, I can't believe it. Like, I literally came home and said to Leslie that day, I'm done. I can't do it. If that's what it takes to be successful, if that's the person you need to, like, approximate to have some, and he makes a lot of money. He's a big senior VP, like, you know, $250,000 fucking dude, but no way, no fucking way. Couldn't do it. Could not do
that's
it.
That's pretty painful. Oh. Okay, I'll just say very briefly, when I decided to be a professor, which was a decision I came to over time, and I started to look around, and most of the people I knew who were professors at that time, not all certainly, but many of them were miserable, unhappy people. I mean, they hated everybody. You know, they hated the kids. They hated their colleagues. They hated the university where they worked. You know, they had, like, I don't, you know, just a real crotchety, negative, nasty kind of attitude. And I remember thinking to myself, well, if this is all I have to look forward to, I'm definitely going to have to find another way to kind of craft a pathway through the professoriate that doesn't lead me to miserable and crotchety. Because that's not, you know, that's not me. That's not me. I think we have a problem in this country anyway that confuses what people do with who they are.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's definitely a part of me that is, you know, Dr. Amin, the intellectual who likes to write and do theory and all that kind of stuff. But there's the other part of me that just wants to eat, you know, some fried green beans from Fridays. Oh, nice. and watch Bring It, perhaps on the couch next to someone with a wide face.
So let me ask this, doctor, the good doctor, how do you propose to... In my opinion, I don't know. I have some other, you know, professorial individuals I've been in circles with. And my hypothesis is that on occasion, the apathy that comes from some of them really stems from tenure. They get kind of like comfortable and stuck and then bored. And then it's like, what are you going to friggin' do? You got a union, you're making X dollars and you've been there for 20 years. Like, are you going to leave now? You're not going to go somewhere else. So what's the recipe to avoid 10-year blahs?
You know, I don't know what it is for everybody, but the truth of the matter for me is I'm a Black woman, intellectual, living in the 21st century, working in a system that never thought I would be a part of it, either as a student or an educator.
Mm.
So tenure doesn't really hold for me this kind of mysterious, oh, I've made it. I'm over the hump. Now it's time to relax, because I've seen too many black women academics in particular and women of color faculty in general who've never been protected by tenure.
Well, we just talked about Tony Montero, right? Dr. Montero.
Right. So it doesn't, you know, I had to get real clear when I was working on my PhD why I was doing it. I was doing it because it puts me in a position to advocate on behalf of my students in particular ways and to craft research in particular ways that I couldn't do otherwise. But I'm just me. You know, I'm just Takiya. I'm not under any illusion around what this doctorate makes me or what being in the professoriate does. If anything, it allows me to leverage certain resources on behalf of communities and causes and ideas that aren't important to me. And that's it.
That's so interesting. I literally left, and at the time, my view was more of a, well, this is security. This is a good income. This is a high level of pay. I'm a white guy. I'll get a job. This will be no problem. And I would have had no, if I was willing to, in fact, I did teach. If I was willing to be mobile and go anywhere I wanted to, I could have had no problem, but it wasn't what I wanted to do. I was like, okay, this is like with real estate. I saw like, ugh, this is not a job I want to have.
I think too, though, I should say, being a black girl from a working class community in a Rust Belt city, you know, that has really shaped so much of my experience and how I see myself and how I move through the world. And so having a job with a certain level of security, you know, was something that was attractive. My mother is very happy that I have health insurance. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's real for her. She's happy that I go to the university and I have an office and, you know, it feels like a safe place, even though we know that there's, you know, that safety is a kind of illusion. So some of that is there. But there are days more often than I can tell you where I think to myself, well, if all of this disappears tomorrow, I'm glad I know how to scrub floors. I'm glad I know how to watch kids. I'm glad I know how to wait tables. I'm glad I know how to be a temp, because I did all of that before.
Right, right, right.
Well, it's funny. So, we had that article that we read about that woman who I think she actually was either finishing up her advanced degree or something like that. But she had been working for, you know, like Peapod, one of these like, you know, grocery purchasing, you know, websites where, you know, they buy your groceries for you. And this was kind of a high end one where she was literally like shopping for rich white women's like food. And they had like all these intricate notes about, you know, the size of the oranges and the color of the this. And she had this realization as she was like deciding on the perfect kale for this woman she was shopping for, that this is literally what her grandmother had done her entire life. And here she is in, you know, getting a higher education. She already has one degree and she's literally doing the same job that her grandmother was doing to even finance this stuff that she's trying to do to better herself. And we never see, you know, white folks being in that position. Like, if your grandmother, you know, was a secretary at a cement company, that's not what you're doing to go through college if you're a white person. Like, that's not what's happening. So,
I mean, even the experience of going through school for me, I worked the whole time, right? So in undergrad, I was working in food service. You know how hard it was to have to make the sandwiches for the kids I went to class with? Mm. You know, 10 minutes ago, I was sitting next to you and now I'm making your freaking turkey sandwich. You know, I worked all through grad school. I worked all through the PhD. You know what it was like to be in a PhD program and, you know, you have white women there talking about how they're here for, you know, it's all about the journey. You know, I'm really here for the journey. And I'm thinking, I got to get out of here in 5 years because I ain't got no money for no journey. Like, I got to get this work done. I got to get this research done. This is not, you know, this is not just about me meandering through the world and having some kind of on Walden experience. And that's why when people talk about class, okay, on paper, maybe you think I'm like my colleague because our salaries look the same. But class is social. You know, it's not just economic and it's inherited. We ain't the same. We ain't the same. No. There are so many ways in which I'm clear about the distance between me and my colleagues and often me and my students as a result of race, gender, and having a particular kind of poor black working class experience. Mm. And that's really hard to navigate. Mm. Even small things like all of my degrees are from public universities. You would think that wouldn't matter, but in certain circles, it does a lot.
For real?
And so when I show up at a conference and I'm presenting, there's a lot of, you know, delighted white folks who crowd around because they're just amazed that the monkey can speak.
Mm.
You know, let alone that I managed to secure an advanced degree. But then when they find out that I got it from one of those public schools, it's like, well,
it's not Duke. She didn't go to one of the Ivy Leagues.
Right. Duke is right. So Ivy then League. It becomes, here's this Negro who is proud of all of the things that we don't think you should be proud of. Like,
you know,
she's proud about being black. She's proud about being poor. She's proud about being from this little nothing city on the corner of, you know, Erie County. Lake Erie. She's proud of having this working class background. And there's a way in which my presence just disrupts a lot of people's narratives about, you know, the professoriate and higher education and all of that. But I'm okay with that. Be disrupted, because I'm not leaving.
Well, and then, you know, if you had the private stuff, and I'm sure even without it, they're all doing the whole, like, oh, that's just affirmative whatever, and, you know, she didn't this or that, Becky with the fucking bad grades bullshit. They'll figure a way to, because what you said, your presence is a front to the narrative that they've crafted, and I'll say that we as white people have crafted of ourselves, you know, who we are, like the very essence of who we are as people, you know, good people. We're good. We work hard and we do all this stuff. It relies on a narrative that blackness and black people are other and not as good.
Yeah.
And so when you're a black woman standing there and you know something and you're speaking with authority about a topic and you're a doctorate and you're getting, you know, paid to be in this space. It's like, you know, bleep, blop, morp doesn't compute. Like it fucks us up. It really does. I swear to God.
I have the experience almost every semester where students walk into my classroom and say, excuse me, miss, is the professor coming?
Oof.
Now I'm in the front of the classroom. I'm in the front. I'm putting the slides up. I'm laying out the handouts. You don't see anyone else. But clearly I'm somebody's helper, right? And people will say, oh, well, you know, maybe that's not about race. Maybe it's just about gender. Maybe it's about age. Look, it can be about all of those things at the same time.
It's about you.
It's about me.
Yeah.
It's about me. And the fact that my white male colleagues who are professors who show up to teach in jeans and flip-flops and polo shirts, nobody ever asks if they're in charge. There's never a question about if that's the professor. But you see me and it's always, well, who's in charge here?
Yeah.
Now, it used to piss me off, but now I don't say anything anymore. Right? So a little white boy walks up to me, excuse me, miss, is the professor coming? I go, yeah, they'll be here. And then I just start class. And then you feel stupid and I let you reconcile with that. I let you deal with that.
Could we do something different? Would you want to do something different? Like have a big like 20 by like 30 fucking picture of yourself? Like, this is your professor, like for day one of class on like some easel or some shit, just something. Would that help? Would that change anything?
No, because the thing of it is, I mean, I work at an institution where, you know, don't nobody look like me. Ain't nobody, everybody, y'all know who I am. And even if you're a first year student just walking into the room, I would much rather you wrestle with the assumption that what professor looks like isn't me. Well, I want you to wrestle with that.
The people that come to your class, they're really, is it Professor T? I mean, is it Tequila? Like, what do they know of before they come in terms of your name? What have they seen?
The interesting thing is that in the catalog, it'll just be my last name. And since my parents are Muslim and my name is Arabic, so I do get, when I'm teaching in the general education, a lot of students who think I'm going to be a Middle Eastern man.
Okay.
And then, so a lot of Middle Eastern students will register for my class. And then when they come in and they see that it's me, that's a whole different kind of both racialized and gendered thing. Because then they're trying to place me. Is she Muslim? Is she not Muslim? She kind of wears head wraps sometimes, but her neckline is kind of low. She's wearing this thing. You know, I always wear a chalice pendant. So, you know, that's not a cross, but what is that?
What is it?
You know,
right.
So
you're all about making us white people not compute.
Kinda, yeah, I disrupt all kind of assumptions around
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. You're just like, oh, wait a minute. I mean, I can't. Wait a minute. Who's the professor? Oh, my God.
I'll say the last thing I want to say about this is just that it also becomes an issue when we get to title. right? So I always say, you know, welcome, all of that stuff. You call me Dr. Amin or Professor Amin, either is fine with me. When I have students who will refuse to call me by my title, well, don't you think it sets up an unnecessary hierarchy? No, this is very necessary. This is, well, my other professor doesn't make me call. I'm not them. We're establishing this boundary, you know, and the worst is when it happens on email, when students, because sometimes I won't even put my name, my first name on my syllabus. It'll just say Professor Amin or Dr. Amin. So then you'll email me, hey, Takia, Dr. So-and-so told me to ask you. So now you done gone to find my name just so you can use it.
And then use Dr. So-and-so in the same, give the title to somebody else. Well, stripping it from you.
But not to me. Certainly not.
Damn. And that's why I made a real good point. The doctor's in the house. You earn that shit. Fucking, it's not honorary, right? You still paying for it? You still got the debt? You still got the...
Listen, I got that $130,000 up over my head. I will be out here doing something strange for some change, okay, to pay these loans. So... No, but it is frustrating because all of that is at play before I get to do my job, right? Before I even get to do the work that I've been trained for and the work that I came into the room for and the work that I know I do exceedingly well, all this shit about race and class and since I'm in a dance department and I'm a plus size woman, you know, body type, all of that is happening before I even get to say good morning and how are you.
Do you feel you have to strip through that to even teach? Do they even hear anything from you until you get through that horseshit?
You know, I do the best I can. I've been teaching for, you know, I taught my first class in 2005. So I've been at this for a little while. Sometimes I can tell that there's noise and that I am the noise. And so I've developed strategies to get around it. I mean, depending on what content I'm introducing, I'll purposely bring in a white person to introduce certain things because I know that they're going to hear it if it's not coming out of my mouth.
Right. Right.
Right. So I will strategically, you know, deploy other people's voices or certain materials or bring in certain guests so that I can introduce some content in a particular way and then do the follow-up because I know that if it comes out of this space, you can't even hear me. And it makes me angry, but at the end of the day, I want you to learn something.
Yeah.
So if that's what I have to do to get you to learn, I will make those, you know, I'll make those contortions and adjustments because at the end of the day, I'm an educator and I care about, I genuinely feel warmly about my students. I do. And I feel warmly towards them generally, and I believe in their capacity to learn. So if I have to turn myself into a Philadelphia pretzel to get you a learning experience, 9 times out of 10, I will do it. But that is the black tax, right? That's the tax that I pay to do this work.
It's why just do your job. To just do your job.
It's why me and so many of my black professor women friends, you know, we all got all kind of, you know, I won't go into detail, but we got all kinds of physical ailments and chronic issues with our health and stress and all kinds of stuff going on. And it comes from having to do these contortions for students and for colleagues just to do the work that we know we're more than capable of doing.
Yeah, we talked on the show that being black, there's a study that showed that just being black in a white supremacist society requires, on average, you know, the black individuals to use like an additional 10-11% of their brain just to navigate, right? Just to be like, well, what's going to happen? What am I going to say? Who's going to interpret this? How are they going to interpret this way? What are white people going to think? Like, there's literally like a constant, you know, barrage of thought that black folk have to navigate white supremacist society.
Right, I think it's like 12% of our brain.
But
power
now,
or whatever.
We're talking about Dr. Takia having to do like, there's that. That's just the average, you know, every old going through white supremacist society. Now to do the thing that she wants to do and is passionate about and loves and gets paid to do and wants to be successful doing has to invoke even more of her brain to navigate this like fuckery just to be able to get little Billy to see the transitive property of A and B or something.
Jeez,
you know?
Yeah. So please understand that means by about 4 o'clock on a Friday during the semester, when I tell you that I am, because I normally don't teach on Fridays, I'm whipped. I am done. I'm in my house in a bathrobe. Like, I've taken a bath with the lavender Epsom salt. I've tried to have a cup of tea. Like, when I tell you I am whooped, and it's not the teaching, research, and service. That's I know how to do that. It's not those parts of the job. It's navigating all of the cultural particularities that the job requires of me.
Right.
And this is why to go out and hear people say, oh, you're a professor. That must be so fun. Or, oh, you're a professor. That sounds so easy.
Yeah. Summer's off. How great.
Right. You get your summers off. You're only working when you're in the classroom, right? So to have people at the same time, you know, we're in this kind of social political moment that is totally intellectual and anti-teacher anyway. So on the one hand, I have a cultural script that's already saying what I do has no value. And then I'm at my job where I have to twist myself into a pretzel and almost stand on my head just to get people to hear me. By the end of a day, I have to have at least one day a week where I do nothing just to recover. The recovery between, the lavender Epsom salt and my therapist, that's the only reason some folks are still walking, truly. Because it's hard out here. It's really hard. People think the professoriate is glamorous or something. And maybe it is for somebody, but not for me. And not for most of the black academics that I know. But I love it. I love this. This is what I love.
You know that your life is a revolution, right? Just you living. You living and doing what you're doing. That is revolution, Takiya.
I'm reminded, like I said, granddad had that third grade education. Grandma had made it to seventh grade. My mom taught public school. She taught seventh and eighth grade English. And my father was a security guard at a library. And now there's me. So I'm never too far away from being very clear to my grandmother scrubbed floors and raised foster children. So I know I come from something that's bigger than this moment. But I be, I try to stay lighthearted. Y'all know me. But it is really work out here. It is really work out here.
I'm going to do something for you. We're going to start like Takiya's like wide funny corner or something, like Fridays at like 8 o'clock. She in the bath, y'all. Let's go. Come on. Hit her up on Twitter. Let's do it.
I will say, though, this is why it's been hard for me to go out, and meet a nice wide faced gentleman, because I be tired.
That's the truth.
Ain't that
the
truth.
Then you do try to meet somebody. He buy you a nice ginger ale at the bar. That's what I like to sip on, And then you tell them you're a teacher. I can say teacher because that's okay. That's acceptable.
Sure. They think like kindergarten or something.
Right. But the minute they find out I'm a professor, then it gets weird. Because then it's all about I have to prove that I'm as smart as you. And, it doesn't mean anything that you have these degrees. And it's like, look, I just want somebody to take me out for hot wings.
Oh, I'm a professor. Oh, I got a pension and a proclivity for a flowery vernacular, too. Let's go. Come on. okay.
And I'm just like, but I just want us to, make it a Netflix evening. Like, we don't have to do that. We don't have to do that dance. So.
There you go. We meant our.
He's fragile. Very fragile.
So fragile. I guess that's about a time flies. Was that like almost 3 hours?
We're coming up on 3 hours.
Love
straight
it.
Up, just
the
like
doctor's
that.
In the house.
The doctor's in the
house. I know we shouldn't on air and stuff. I'm not trying to leveraging and pressures and stuff, but
what are the pressures?
Jamaica. I'm just talking. So me and Leslie was talking like, hey, if Takiya came to Jamaica and maybe maybe if she did some things yoga or dance or movements for us, maybe we could hook her up with some discount on the room or something. We're coming to drink. I don't know. I'm just put a pin and put a bug in your ear. Just poop.
Y'all know I want to be in Jamaica so bad with y'all. Y'all know I'm trying to make it happen. It's just a difficult moment. Now, if I had a wide face sponsor who was interested
ding,
in
ding, ding.
The Jamaica
ding,
trip,
ding, ding.
Then I could pull out, my fat bikini and we could start to pack these bags. hint, hint, nudge, nudge. Find me on the Twitters.
I would.
Takiya N as in Nancy. I mean, just FYI.
That's right. My
BFF is going, and he's single, but I wouldn't stick him on anybody.
Nope. Nobody.
He's a disaster.
The whole kibosh on that. Let me find out. Leslie was like, nah, no.
Nah, he's a disaster at this moment.
I already said nope.
He's a disaster.
Always been a disaster. But that ain't a new phenomenon.
Dr. Anastasia isn't.
It's not a new phenomenon. A disaster. It's not a new
phenomenon.
He's a fun
disaster, though.
It's not a new
He just
phenomenon.
Isn't like he's the best kind of disaster, just not to be in like romantic relationship with.
And I don't know about any of those things, but disaster I'll agree with. Anyways, we cannot thank you enough for joining us. It's been, of course, as we expected, enlightening, hilarious, amazing. Thank you so much for joining us, Takiya, and I'll hopefully see you in a few weeks. I'm excited about that.
I am so glad that y'all had me on. I mean, you know, you could have asked me to give you a kidney or, you know, some plasma or some cornea, whatever. I would have said,
this is better.
No, you just need to let me work the rice paddy when you get the island.
It's really an honor to be on one of my favorite podcasts. And now I got to be a guest. This is like highlight of the year. So thanks, guys.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for your time. We really appreciate it. It was an absolute blast.
So wonderful. Next week we have BD Jackson, one beautiful Mel from The Good and Terrible Show coming back on. And again, we finished out the month with Nick Chu and R to the Edgy from the What's the Tea podcast.
I love them.
Oh my God. They're the best.
Yeah, I love their, they feel like a married couple. I wish they were because of course, like obviously like that's, you know, that's ridiculous.
Sorry, Nicole. But, sorry, Reggie.
Yeah, that's crazy. But I love them. They're banter. They're back and forth. Like I can't believe they're only friends for the last like not even that long. Like 7-8 years, I think it's been.
Yeah, but they're tight. They good.
Yeah,
like
that's good.
They're soulmates. That's what it means.
Podcast
and friend soulmates. Soulmates. That happens. All right. I think that's it, babe.
Good night, everybody.
High five.